coming soon. Jolting Tales of Horror. Creepshow. From the author of Carrie, The Shining, and Cujo. And the creator of Night of the Living Dead and Dawn of the Dead. You'll scream at ghastly ghouls. Cringe at weird kids. And shiver at the doings of evil doctors.
This is going to be extremely painful, Mr. Verrill.
Creepshow will grab you, grow on you, and give you the creeps.
No, this is going to be an entirely new experience.
Creepshow, the most fun you'll ever have being scared.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Film and Water Podcast, proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, Rob Kelly. And for this episode, we are going to be doing a commentary track for one of my favorite movies of all time on the occasion of its 40th anniversary, George Romero's Creepshow. And who better to join me to talk about this wonderful movie than the grandson of George Romero, the network's own Max Romero. Hi, Max.
Hey, Rob. God, I wish.
Wait, you are not. I thought that these were stories that your beloved grandfather George told you on his knee as you were a child. Is this not the case?
You know, unfortunately, I am not. I'm not related to any famous Romero, so I'm not related to George Romero, and I'm not related to Tina Romero from Alucarda. Apparently there's some well-known Romeros in Albuquerque, but I don't know them, so I don't know. It's a wash.
Oh, I have been misinformed. So there was a Filipino director who made a bunch of Z-grade movies named Eddie Romero. Are you related to him in any way?
Let's say yes.
All right, cool. Yeah, all right, excellent. He made a bunch of fun movies. We'll do one of those at some point. Okay, well, as I said, Creepshow turns 40 this year. Now, we've covered this movie on a regular episode of Film and Water way back in like episode 10 or something, really early on, because I love this movie, and as I said, it turns 40 this year. And, you know, we've already done a couple of commentaries this year for movies that have turned 40. We did My Favorite Year. We did Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. I mean, also on top of this year, on top of Creepshow in 1982, you've got Poltergeist, Swamp Thing, E.T. I mean, that's a lot. That's a lot of The Thing. I mean, 1982 was a bumper crop year for great movies.
It really was.
I mean, geez.
I mean, so many of those movies. And I think I probably saw all of those in the theater.
Oh, okay. So, all right.
I want to say probably.
I'm excited to hear that. Some of them I did not see, but I mean, I've caught up with them. But man, you just, when you go back and you look at the anniversary, you're like, man, all that came out in 1 year, that is just absolutely amazing. So without further ado, let's get right to it. So Max and I are going to count down 3, 2, 1, and then go. And then when I say go, we are going to start the movie. So if for some reason you are watching the movie along with us, you know how to sync it up. But I think most of you are listening to this, have seen Creepshow, know it pretty well. So you probably can just listen to us as we talk. So, okay, Max, if you're ready, you want to get rolling?
I'm ready.
All right, cool. So 3, 2, 1, Creepshow. All right, so Max, you said that you saw this in the theater?
I did.
Wow. Now you were a little kid, right? I mean, young to see this. This is awesome.
I was 12 when this came out.
That's young to see a R&R movie, dude.
Well, you know, I was watching these movies when I was like 6 or 7. So, you know, this, at this point, this was like nothing.
No helicopter parenting for the Romeros, apparently.
Oh, no. No, they dragged us to every movie that came out. And, oh, yeah, I'm deeply scarred.
So, we'll deal with that in a minute. So your parents took you to this? You didn't just see it? Your parents took you?
No, my parents took me to this, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Loser. That is that's impressive. That is really impressive.
See, right now we're watching Tom Atkins
smacking Stephen King's son Joe Hill right there across the face. I love this whole bit about the "you have to get your cufflinks on Sunday." he talks weird. The little boy has like kind of a weird slight lisp or something going on in this. But man, I love Tom Atkins. Who doesn't love Tom Atkins? You know what I mean? He's just so many great horror movies and stuff. But I mean, man, he's such a dick here. He's just so mean. This is so from like kind of an earlier era where you had dads regarding comic books this way. I would say in 1982, that wasn't really a thing anymore. But this is clearly set in modern day, but it's supposed to be. Well, I don't know. We don't know that it's set in modern day, right? I mean, I guess it could be.
It looks like it is. You know, well, modern day of the 80s. I mean, there's that rattan rocking chair that the mom is sitting in.
So. She's knitting. You know, this is classic stuff. I love this line about all that horror crap. Things coming out of crates eating people. I just love the way he says it. He's drinking the beer. There we go. Ah, beautiful alcoholism. You want to read this stuff? Well, no, but all right. I took care of it. Here's the bitter line here. That's why God made fathers.
That is awful. But, you know, but. That's the whole thing that kicks this off is Atkins as the dad throwing away the kid's Creepshow comic.
Yep.
And he is just, you know, right now, I hope you're running hell.
I love the kid. I love the verbal little like growl they put under. He's like, I hope you run in hell. That's great. Yeah. This is super.
It is.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, it's great to see Tom Atkins because most people know him probably from Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. And there's the creep.
There we go. Look how happy he is.
Oh, I know. That's creepier to me than the creep.
I know. He's really into it. Like, he's really happy. This was kind of like what my room sort of looked like. I didn't have as much horror stuff, but it was cool to see that in a movie where our kids, like, it was kind of like in Poltergeist, you know, where the kid has all the Star Wars toys. And I'm like, that's what my room looked like, you know? So it was cool to see that reflected in a movie. So here we go, our opening credits, Creepshow. Now, by the way, it says first issue. On the cover, the first issue, and yet we'll see in a few minutes. There's a letters page talking about previous issues of Creepshow.
George Romero. Maybe they've solicited the letters.
Yeah, they sent Ashcan edition.
They sent Ashcan's out.
Creepshow. Here's this great cast like Fritz and look at that, Leslie Nielsen, Carrie Nye.
Now these stills in this animation. This is done by Bernie Wrightson, right?
I don't know. I know he did the comic book adaptation. I don't know if these are him though. I don't really know. Actually, I know that Jack Kamen did the original cover, the original poster, which they changed to what you're familiar with seeing now. But
yeah, my understanding was that, and it looks like him, that Wrightson did these drawings for the animation and for the interstitial stuff. And it sure looks like his stuff from that time.
I could see that. Yeah. I could see that. Their original screenplay by Stephen King. I will tell this story as fast as possible because this movie is, there's a lot to say about this movie. Here we go. Father's Day. But I remembered my dad took me and my sister to a movie. This would have been 1982. And we went to a bookstore in the mall. Remember those? And, you know, 1982 bookstores, they didn't have comic books. Their things weren't traded. You know, you didn't see comic books. But then I remembered sitting on an end cap was this graphic novel looking thing called Creepshow. And it said Bernie Wrightson. And of course, that was a name I knew. And my eyes went right to it. And I opened it up and I was like, wow, what is this? It's like a comic book, but it's like got a hard cover and it's full of heart. Like it right up my alley. Yeah. But I knew that my father was probably not going to buy it for me because I think he probably figured it was too adult for me. So I just kept reading it, hoping he would bend, but he didn't take the bait. And so I just quietly just put it back and didn't get it. And I didn't get the book till much later. Have you ever read the comic?
I have not, but you know, but that's interesting that you mentioned your dad and we were talking about my family taking me to these movies. My dad was actually really excited to bring me to this movie because he did read these horror comics when he was a kid.
Ah.
So he was into it. He couldn't wait to bring me to this.
So he read ECs like specifically. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah. Yeah. He read all that stuff. So yeah, it was great.
Had you read them by this point? Were you kind of, were you aware of like what they were kind of riffing on?
I was aware of them, but I hadn't read EC specifically.
Gotcha.
Okay. So, you know, I was reading like the old DC horror right. stuff.
And unexpected. That sort of stuff. Yeah, yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Ed Harris, an early young Ed Harris, just before he kind of broke big
mm-hmm.
here. Yeah. We've already seen a couple of these comic book panels. By the way, in the comic book version, the crate is the third story, and mm-hmm. They're Creeping Up on You is the fourth story, and they switched it around for the movie, I think, for the better. Right. We'll talk about it a little bit, about what how we kind of rate these individual stories. I think most people feel that the crate is the centerpiece of the movie. It's the longest story. I think it's probably got the most august cast, kind of, so I think it makes sense kind of in the position that it's in. But I said I never read the comic until much, much later. And then, you know, I was like, oh, my God, this is so cool. By then, I'd seen the movie. Now, I didn't see this in the theater. I had to have seen this on cable back when mm-hmm. my parents weren't. And here we go. Here's the ashtray.
The ashtray, yeah.
Which is going to feature in every segment. This ashtray is going to appear.
Exactly.
You can actually see it in every segment. Mm-hmm. I went on. It's funny. I bought the Creepshow Blu-ray. The very deluxe version by Shout Factory. And it's got a commentary track by George Romero and Tom Savini. And they try and track the ashtray. And they forget to, like, halfway through. They're like, wait, what? We missed it in that segment. So I went and looked it up. And there was somebody had a blog post showing where it is in every segment. So every time it comes up, I'll point it out. But, I mean, I said I must have seen this on cable. Because, like I said, there's no way my dad would have taken this to me when I was taking me to this when I was 11 here.
Yeah, so, well, and here's the arrival of Aunt Bedelia.
Aunt Bedelia.
Vivica Lynfers.
Vivica Lynfers.
Who is, I loved her. People might know her as the professor from The Sure Thing.
That's right. Yes. 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 Yeah. Yes. That's one of Kelly's favorite movies.
Yeah, it's a great movie. But yeah, they just talked about how her father killed her boyfriend, fiance. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And her now she
elder
comes
fiance.
Visit,
yeah.
Yeah. And now she comes once a year to visit her father's grave. So, and the rest of her snooty, rich family is waiting for her to show up. And Ed Harris is he a fiance or is he a husband at this point?
I think they call him fiance. That will come up in a second. But we find out that they don't like him too much. They think he's kind of like a rube kind of thing. But you can tell by the way, I guess, Carrie Nye here is talking. But she even says, the three of us. Oh, no, of course, the four of us.
Yeah, yes.
Really. Laying it on thick that you're not part of this.
But, you know, I also always get the sense that, you know, he's there for the money. He doesn't really, he's there for a good time with Elizabeth Regan, who has not been in a lot else, I don't think, other than this.
No, I'm not too familiar with her.
Yeah. And, but you know, but she's got that 80s sexiness to her. So.
Oh yeah. Oh, totally. Totally. I love how much, I love Vivica Lynfers is like doing like a Burgess Meredith Penguin thing here. He's kind of like talking when she does the speech, which, by the way, was mostly ad-libbed. Apparently she ad-libbed a lot of her speech, which Stephen King was not super thrilled about. Oh, but wow. when she does the talk and she's like, he did something for me. And you just feel like, I expect her to like, wow, wow, wow. It's got that kind of vibe to it. Of all the segments,
where's my Father's Day cake?
Of all the segments, this one has had the most removed from it. In the editing. And in fact, if you look at, if you watch the trailer for Creepshow, there's a scene that is not in the film where you see Bedelia visiting a morgue where she sees the corpse of her dead fiance.
Oh, wow.
And it goes by very quickly. And they said of all the segments, this one had the most taken out of it. Now, I think, all these segments are great. I love this movie. I think it's probably the greatest horror anthology of all time. My only issue with this one at all is like there's no real like hook to it or twist. Like it's just he comes alive and he kills them all. The end. You know what I mean?
It's very straightforward. Yeah.
Very basic. I love this. He's banging the cane. Look at this. Yeah. These panels. Look at this.
Bedelia.
Like,
yeah.
Nobody knew what this stuff was. You know what I mean? It's like only comic book nerds knew what this stuff was.
Nope. Oh, here comes the ashtray.
There we go.
So Bedelia picks up the ashtray. Lifts it up.
Yep.
Wham.
Bammo. There we go. Oh, look at that. Oh,
look at that. And the bloody box there.
Yep. I also read that originally Romero wanted to shoot each segment in a different style. Mm-hmm. He wanted to do one segment in 3D and one segment in black and white. I would imagine that might have gotten a little old, especially 3D. Mm-hmm. But a black and white segment would have been kind of interesting, you know.
I mean, I think he wanted to do like a, the original idea was to do like a history of horror in film, I think. And that's why he wanted to do black and white. He wanted to do, you know, the 3D that you mentioned, you know, just different eras, I guess, up to this point. So there's Bedelia.
I love the socks, kinda. the knee socks kind of rolled down.
And I love that that bottle of Jim Beam, she's obviously drunk and she's yelling at her dad's headstone. But that bottle is pretty much empty. She's been working on that.
That, and when she spills it, she's going to spill it in a second. Mm-hmm. The subtext is that it's that wakes him up. Like that's some sort of like folktale that the whiskey is going to wake you. I'd never heard that. I'm not familiar with that.
But. Me neither. And it's supposed to be the water of life, I think, is what it's called in Ireland or something like that.
I should know that. That's my half of my heritage, but I don't know what it is.
Come on, Kelly.
Sorry. Here we go.
Yeah. And here
she's just vamping now. She's just making stuff up, which is great.
Yeah. No. And here she's explaining how Sylvia covered the whole thing up because they all wanted Granddad's money. So yeah, she's great though. Oh, there it
go. Is. Okay.
Jim Beam into the ground.
You're gonna chip Jim Beam into the ground. Now, I mean, I guess is that, you know, she's been coming here every year. I guess she's never spilled whiskey before. You know what I mean? Like previously he would pop up. There we go. Sure. Okay. I love the voice. The kind of phlegmy, watery,
almost like mechanical. You know, you can kind of hear the mechanical manipulation, but it still sounds otherworldly.
Yeah. It's great. It's so creepy. Like his vocal cords have been, you know, stewing in muddy ground for a while. This is great. Look at that. The lighting, the hard red key light on the right and then the blue.
I love that because that is straight out of EC Comics.
Yeah.
That is just right there. Yeah.
Here we go. This is everybody. Ed Harris grooving. Don't let go. Look at this. I love this. Look at that. Yeah. Ooh. Oh, look at that. Oh, sensual.
Yeah.
This is the forbidden dance. Yeah. This is
a very mating exciting dance right here.
Yeah. This is what won her. This is what won her. Is this dance?
Yeah, seeing people are wondering where is Bedelia?
Yeah, it's like, guys, it's nighttime. Like, what are we doing? How long is she gonna? You gonna just let her be out there this whole time? Like, my God, she's been out there like 5 hours. What's going on? Well,
especially since, you know, they show it later, but the cemetery is right next to the house.
Yeah, right. Like, you should be able to see her from where you are. Like, what's happening? Oh, this poor. I hate the weights. The maid is going to get it. The maid didn't do anything wrong, you know? It's like, that sucks. The maid's not, he's not part of this. Sometimes
That's Nan Mogg. It's Mrs. Danvers, who looks so familiar, but didn't really do a whole lot after either. You know, she didn't have, you know, I don't think she had that much of a career, but she, you know, there's so many character actors that, kind of sprinkled throughout this, and a lot of Pittsburgh actors.
Yeah, right, because they shot most of this in Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in Romero's hometown.
Yep.
So, and a lot, almost everyone in this movie was in a movie called Knight Riders, which was
right his previous movie film, before right. this.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. So you know, a lot of Knight Riders alums in this.
I mentioned this now just because it's whereas we're just waiting for Ed Harris to get killed. When I was in high school, one of my art projects was we had to create some sort of three-dimensional great fog there, some sort of three-dimensional display. And we had to draw it and do it like it was kind of, I forget exactly what the point of it was, but anyway, I created out of cardboard and marker and pencil and colored pencil, a 3D VHS display for Creepshow. And I made it out of my own two little hands, and I made a little box where you could slide the video cassette. It'd be like the kind of little standee that you would have seen in a video store, you know, when they were trying to sell a movie for like $29.99. And I drew it. I drew little segments, little boxes representing all the stories, and I cut out the top portion out of like the like a skeleton head. So I did like almost like a die cut thing. I just went to town. I wish I still had it. Cause it was like, it was horrible looking cause I couldn't draw back then, but the love of the movie is there. in evidence. Oh, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, and I even went so far. I remember I drew a little picture of a man, a face saying, "Help me, I'm trapped down here." And I glued it in the bottom of the pocket that you'd put the video cassette in.
Oh,
so
wow.
You wouldn't know it was there unless you happened to look directly in. And I think, wow, I got a good grade on it because it was just the sheer enthusiasm I had. Again, I wish I had kept it, but that's how much I love this movie. I was just like, oh, this is just so my jam. I had read DC Comics by this point. I was familiar with DC. So this was, again, this was just totally up my alley. And just, you have to remember, comic book movies were still pretty rare. You know, right. We had Swamp Thing this year and there were the Superman movies, but still, seeing something so loving towards comic books was still pretty unique. You know, right. Oh, here we go.
Nope.
He's just okay.
And he kind of laughs at himself. He's fallen into a.
Now, I would get up immediately. I would have gotten up immediately. I would not. Yeah, I know that the whole bit is like every time he moves, the thing moves a little more. But I don't know. I think I could go faster than the.
Yeah, because he's fallen into basically the depression. Oh, found Ambedelia. She's looked better. He's basically fallen into the shallow of where the father has come out of his grave, and he's laying there watching this, I don't know, memorial thing. Oh, there he is. Every time he moves. And then
here we go. No, I guess he's not pushing it then. He's using his force power.
Bloop. And that's the end of Ed Harris.
I love the laughter.
Yeah.
That's great. It's great. It's just, it's so simple, but it's just so good. Where's my cake? There we go.
So far he's choked Aunt Bedelia. He's crushed Ed Harris. And the rest of the family's here waiting and smoking and drinking in the house.
By the way, screw this family with their dead animals in the background. All right? Screw them. I hate that shit. Oh, he just puts his... Oh, he puts his...
Regan's dancing again.
His handkerchief over the fox's head. What a disrespect. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. They don't know what to do with their money and they don't know what to do with their stuff. So it's just...
Oh, God. Well, thank God we've solved that, right?
Oh, yeah. And see, I expect he's hobnobbing with Aunt Bedelia. I think they know who Ed Harris is.
I guess so. Yeah. here goes. You go, Richard. And he says, "You go. I don't even like him." There, he's your husband. There he goes.
He's your husband.
I don't even like him.
In this part, after all, he's such a sweet boy. Ha 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 ha. So is the mom threatening to steal her husband?
I never thought of it like that. Interesting.
Is that the subtext of that?
Maybe. Oh, yeah. She's thinking a lot of herself, I'd say. This is Dan. I love the blue lighting. Mm-hmm. Now, all this was shot in a real guy's house. There's a super rich dude in Pittsburgh, and they just used his house. And apparently, he was very upset that they made muddy footprints on his floor. This is, here we go. Right. Yeah. Whammo. Oh. There we go. Poor Mrs. Danvers.
Yeah. Right in the window. My wife Sandy yesterday was asking me why doesn't she turn on the light? Why doesn't he? But that's actually that's kind of addressed actually later in this.
Wow.
Yep. So dear old granddad just snapped his daughter's neck. That's his daughter, right?
His granddaughter.
His granddaughter.
Because Bedelia is his daughter, and so So these are his great grandchildren. These
right
here. Yeah, I know. Like, didn't these two hear what happened? Like, didn't their mother's neck just got snapped in the other room? Like, how big is this house? Like, what is, you know? This is kind of, he's your hick husband, I mean.
Yeah. And I like that. That's a little, I mean, these are, everyone in this movie is a two-dimensional character. They're not really deep.
Yeah.
But, that's nice that they give a little bit of some hints of what's going on in the this twisted family dynamic here.
I like that moment where he's like, all right, come on. Like, all right, he's not a total shit, Like, all right, here we go. Are we conserving electricity?
Yeah.
Conserving energy? Like,
see? And I appreciate that, too, because it's kind of like in horror movies, you always see these things like, oh, that's so dumb, I would turn on the light. And this guy's like going, why aren't the lights on?
Mm-hmm. Now, that must be a different door, right? Because Mrs. Danvers popped in from the...
Oh, that's true.
The door opened in the other direction. So they must have two entrance, like two, you know, one door here, one door there.
Maybe.
There we go.
There he is, the famous cake.
Whammo.
Sylvia's head with candles in it.
And here's the big
cake.
I love, there we go. Look at that.
Look at those.
Oh, my God. Look at that.
Those shock lines coming out of their heads.
Gag. Arg.
And I love the way it transitions to these drawn panels.
Yeah.
And, you know, these comics that just the comic and the pages flipping. And
yeah. Oh, here we go now. All these people talking about. There we go. Now, story two.
So is this the first movie that really leaned into the comic book look? Because I couldn't think of any other ones.
I mean, Flash Gordon, you could say. Flash Gordon had those credits, you know, with the Alex Raymond artwork. But the movie itself, I mean, the color scheme is certainly comic booky, but I mean, using the panels, even Doc Savage didn't really do. I mean, outside of Batman, the TV series, of course, but
right, yeah.
But yeah. So here's our author, everybody.
Stephen King.
Now, are you? Appearance. What was his first one?
His first one was something I can't remember. Give me a second to think of it.
Okay.
But this is also his first screenplay. This is the first time he wrote.
Right. Yes. I didn't know that he was in another movie. I knew he was in movies after this. I didn't know that he did anything before this.
I want to say it's a Romero movie.
Don't touch it. Don't. It's Jordy. Okay. Now, what do you think of his performance here? That the one knock this movie ever takes from anybody is his performance, because it's so cartoony. I mean, you said everybody's two dimensional, but he's like one and a half dimensional. You know, I mean, it's so. But it's fun. It's like, this is meant to be. EC would do funny stories, you know? Yeah. They would do, you know, and this is their, tonally, it's a nice change up, because the next one is going to be a lot more serious. So I like that this is a goofy one.
You know, to me, it fits perfectly with the EC aesthetic, because not every story was, you know, these are meant to be horrifying, but they're also kind of meant to be funny. And this is the goofiest one of the anthology.
Yep.
But the tens and fives, and he's like, oh yeah, keep accounting.
$200 is going to change his life.
But that does not, you know, a lot of people criticize this segment, but actually it's probably one of my favorites, actually, just because the character is so guileless. And this has such, I mean, I'm going to skip ahead a little bit, but it has such a tragic ending, really. you know, he's licking his fingers. Not a good idea.
He's gonna. There you go. Oh,
come on, Jordy.
Awful.
Ugly. Ugly blisters there. But the Romero's direction to Stephen King in this was to basically act like Wile E. Coyote as
he's falling off the cliff. when you hear that direction, you go, that makes total sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly what he's doing. You know, he's playing this basically dumb hick who found a meteor. those reactions.
Jordy, bro.
You done it now,
Lunkhead.
Yeah, he broke the meteor.
Now he's Department of Meteors.
Yeah,
my broken meteor.
And those Dutch angles.
You must be joking. And the echo of the banging down of the lid.
I like that Jordy brings it to his imagination. He's bringing it in a bucket.
Yeah, he didn't put it in a box. Like, he just just carried it in.
Just a beat up bucket. You know, I love that blue in the. So the meteor is split open. It has this liquid in it, and it's like this blue liquid that just is iridescent, and it's just, you know, it just, you know, like you said, don't touch it. Don't touch that.
Don't touch, Jordy.
It's obviously not any good.
Yeah. Here, this is going to be one of the great memorable lines in all of Creepshow.
Meteor shit.
I have a friend who, anytime we are together and Creepshow comes up, he just immediately, meteor shit. Like, it's just immediately.
That is the first line that I always think of. I mean, this is a very quotable movie, but that's always the first line I think of. I think I'm going to just start saying it every time I get something on my hands. Even when I'm cooking, I'm just going to go, meteor shit.
Meteor shit. Great. This is kind of a rundown place Jordy's rocking here. He talks about pay off that bank loan, which, you know, I mean, look, this movie's not you know, the battle for Algiers or anything, but that's a political comment, you know, like
This
guy's got a bank loan, an onerous bank loan that he's trying to pay off, and he's willing to do something as dumb and dangerous as this to pay off the bank loan. You know, that's a little comment from Stephen King.
That's a hallmark of George Romero's work. You know, it's.
Yeah, right, right.
It's always there's always a little social commentary in there, you know, and this is a guy who's living out in the middle of nowhere, obviously owns farmland, but he, you know, he's in debt.
No, he's sucking on
his fingers.
Jeez. No.
You know, and I have to tell you, you know, I mean, I'm the last person to talk about a person's appearance, but Stephen King's goofy mug is just perfect for this.
His hair gets all slicked down.
And seeing
you talked about the blue. I love the grass. It's so iridescent, like it's bright green. Oh, there we go. Oh, shit.
Well, and I love the way it's like mossy, but it also has these spiky bits that kind of like move on there. And you know, it's supposed to be, I guess it's, you could say it's the wind, but it really looks like it's just moving on its own. It's ominous.
Now look at that phone. I keep saying, is this movie set in the 80s? But I mean, he could potentially have a phone that old, but that tells me I love that he slides across the camera. Yeah. That's great.
You know, and Stephen King is just in his imagination when he's going to see a doctor who's the same guy as the
meteor guy. Yeah.
Professor. That's Bingo O'Malley. He's gonna the only thing we can do is chop off those fingers.
Now, Stephen King, in his book on writing, which is a marvelous book, tells a story about being a child and getting an earache. And they took him to the doctor, and the doctor promised him that what he was going to do to Stephen King was not going to hurt. And then he essentially punctured his eardrum with a needle.
Jeez.
And he said the pain was so bad that he passed out.
Wow.
And he said he never trusted doctors after that, which understandable. I have to feel like that's a little bit of this. Like where he pulled it, like just this fear of a doctor being an absolute monster, you know, and just the way this is going to be very painful, like he's not even trying to sugarcoat it.
He's telling him straight out. I guess at least he didn't tell him it wasn't going to hurt at all.
And he doesn't have to look so gleeful about it though. You know what I mean? Like he made him look a little sorry.
There's that blue light. You know, this is Stephen King in a overalls and everything else. I am pretty sure that 5 o'clock shadow he's got is his own. he just decided not to shave that day. And he's
production value.
He's
about to see someone from his tongue
in a mirror.
Oh, and no. It's
on his tongue. That grass is just growing everywhere.
Yep.
Covering everything.
Page turn. Look at that. That's great. Yeah.
Those are great transitions.
How is he even getting
that green light? Makes everything else look so green.
Yeah. Well, I guess he's got rabbit ears, right? He's getting it. That's how he's getting it. He's not getting it because he just looks like he's in the middle of nowhere.
Oh, another line I love. Glory, don't it itch.
Don't it itch. As the Veriluck, always in, always bad.
I love this character. I really have to admit that. This is one of those things when you watch a movie and you can't imagine anyone else doing this character. I can't imagine anyone but Stephen King doing this.
Yeah. Now he's watching The Grapes of Wrath there. That he's watching a scene from The Grapes of Wrath, which is, I mean, if, you know, thematically, hardscrabble people trying to survive, but also a Warner Brothers movie, I believe. So, you know, I didn't have to pay for it.
And it is possible. This is set. This kind of everything looks sort of like maybe the 40s, late 30s.
Yeah,
you know? And it's not like EC Comics didn't jump around in history. So it's very possible this is in a different time, I guess.
Yeah, that's true. The opening segment. It doesn't mean they're all the same time frame. It could be this one is, you know, older. This one is definitely. Look at that. Oh man.
Oh, and Stephen King's first movie appearance was, of course, I should have realized it, in Knight Riders.
Oh, is he in that? Oh, yeah. I haven't seen Knight Riders in so long, I don't remember. Okay.
He is Hoagie Man, apparently.
Okay. Have you read a lot of Stephen King? Like a lot of his books?
You know, like a lot of people, I got really into Stephen King when I was like around 14 or 15. Mm-hmm. He's going to make himself a screwdriver here.
big one.
Who can blame him? Yeah, he's just pouring that right into a hole. Pitcher of orange juice.
I think I did that at the Boston Comic Con a couple of years ago.
He stirs it with the bottle. That's great. And I read a lot of his stuff, but I started getting mad at Stephen King because it was like he would write these great books and then kind of like fumble the ending. And that annoyed me a little bit. And so I got off from it, and then it was hard to get back into it. And he, a lot of what it is, I actually like Stephen King a lot. And I've actually been rereading some of his stuff. But it was those sad eyes of his. He's listening to a television preacher, and he's just, those eyes, he's just getting desperate. Yeah. But the, he's so prolific.
It's ridiculous. It's absurd.
I don't know how I could catch up. And I don't even know what is good and what isn't from him now.
Right.
It's just so much.
I remember on SNL, they had a bit in the 80s with John Lovitz as Stephen King, and they were talking to him like on Weekend Update, and it's like him and a typewriter, and he's just like, and then he's like, wait, I'm blocked. Wait, no, I'm not. And he goes right back to it. I was like, okay.
I'm seeing Jory's woken up with his moss beard here.
Look at this. This is great. Oh, look at that. Oh my God. But yeah, I'm the same way. I got into it in like early teens and read a lot of the early stuff and Carrie and The Shining. And he did this one great short story. I haven't read it since the 80s, but I remember it always. It's like a doctor who is like a drug addict or something. Like he's a coke addict and he washes up on an island. Yeah, and he realizes the only way he's going to survive is to amputate his own body parts and eat them. And he's slowly working his way up from his foot to his leg. You know, it's like, what a great prank. Like, you know, king of the premises.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no. His ideas are just, you know, so horrific. Here he's about to.
Now, that's the same actor that plays the doctor and the meteor guy. I didn't realize that until I heard the commentary. It's the same actor playing authority figure through all of his.
Yeah, he's really working.
Christ, 3 years almost.
That's his dad. You ain't going to get in that tub, are you?
Really? It's fun. Again, I like the porno mags in the corner. Swank. Yeah. That's great. Swank. My God.
Oh, Jesus.
I remember Swank. That's all I'll say. Man. I just remember Swank.
So do I. God, I can't remember how it's been since I've seen one.
Wow. But, like, I mean, like you said, the characters are paper thin, and they're supposed to be, but I like that you get a lot from this exchange, you know, like he Jordy's dad is probably pretty tough to live with, and Jordy's a failure in his father's eyes, and Jordy knows that he's a failure, and this is just one more failure, and it's like, wow, that's sad, you know. Like that's sad.
It is.
Poor guy,
it really is. His hands are up,
and then there's the water. Shimmering,
just calling to him, and you know, and he knows he shouldn't, but dang it, Jordy.
It looks so refreshing. How can you not? And he just falls into it.
Ah, it just dives in there.
Oh, better. Oh, God, well, the bottle of Ripple. It's already been.
Yeah. So here we are the next morning. Everything has grown exponentially. This house is just covered in moss now.
More taxidermy. I wonder if there's a taxidermed animal in every segment. See, two for two here.
Yeah.
Look at this. Oh. And now we get the news report.
Right.
I'm old enough to remember when that's what was on television at 4 in the morning, you know? Like, the TV wasn't on all night. Like, there was literally that kind of programming. It was just that kind of, like...
Well, I'm old enough to remember when the TV would go off at midnight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, here's Jordy with another great... None more great voice work, please, God. Yeah. He's just a plant person.
Just this one.
He's got this shotgun. He's pointing to his head. Yeah, please,
so
God.
Sad. Just so sad.
Once.
Oh,
bam.
Oh, and I love the way the body slumps and the slight sound.
Well, and I also like how apparently he has been almost complete. He must be completely replaced by plants because there's no blood, there's no gore.
No, you're right. Yeah.
Just plant matter. There's Castle 5 miles
from the first Castle mention Rock. Of Castle Rock in any
piece of really?
Entertainment. Yes, they mentioned that in the Romero commentary, the George Romero, not the Max Romero.
Yeah.
this is the first mention ever of Castle Rock in any piece of Stephen King. The voodoo doll. I love this.
Look at that voodoo doll.
I love the coupon is missing. That's great. That's a great.
That'll come up later. Something to tide you over. The third segment now.
Again, yeah, the art is marvelous. The art's just mm-hmm. super.
Okay, so this fish isn't like in a spherical thing hanging from the ceiling. How do you clean that?
How do you feed it? Yeah, I mean, right. Yeah, this is crazy. This is a nice place. I know we never find out what Ted Danson's character does for a living, but man, this is a swanky place. Yeah. Windows, this is very much plants. Like what you imagine if you didn't live in a city, what Sam Malone would have. This has got a real bachelor kind of hangout.
Yeah. And there's Leslie Nielsen.
Leslie Nielsen, who had already done Airplane, of course, at this point, but was not quite as locked into the Naked Gun stuff mm-hmm. as he would become. And so he was still doing the occasional serious performance. And he's great in this.
He is.
He's terrific. He's got these dead eyes. He is just, he's a complete sociopath. And mm-hmm. he's genuinely frightening. He's really, he's terrific in
he
this.
He is like just pleasantly psychotic because yeah. he's confronting Ted Danson because he's sleeping with his wife, and he, you know, is very nice about it, but he's also just, you know,
very nice.
His reaction to it. I mean, and look, being cheated on is a terrible thing, and I understand that people will get very angry about that and do crazy things, but this is like elaborate.
Yeah.
What Leslie Nielsen comes up with.
This is worse than slapping someone at the Oscars. This is,
Wait, did someone slap someone at the Oscars?
Timely reference. This, that joke will not at all be dated when people listen to this 6 months from now, if they do. I love how he's not answering Ted Danson's questions. Like Ted Danson's talking about, you know, like she just wants out. She doesn't want any money. And he's just like, you got to dust off these heads. Like he's just,
he's fussing with his TV.
Yep.
And see, that's the first sign of danger we see right there. Take your hand off me right now. And Ted Danson backs off.
He does because he's scary. I mean, he's genuinely scary. And this is, I mean, again, this is Ted Danson, of course, just before Cheers.
Right.
Although I think this movie came out November 10th, 1982. So Cheers would have probably had just been on the air a couple of weeks by this point.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny, we talked about it in the first episode of Cheerscast, where they talk about the sweatiest movie ever made, and someone says Body Heat. And then there's a little reaction to Ted Danson, because of course he's in Body Heat. It would have been, now there's not a lot of sweating in this movie. It would have been funny if somebody was like, Creepshow! Just get in all the Ted Danson movies before he became Sam Malone. Hit my head on that.
Ted Danson doesn't want him to.
It's
a bad idea for Ted Danson to do something to him.
Yeah, I love that. Believe me, you want to know.
Mm-hmm.
He's great. He's just great. It's kind of a shame that he got. I mean, I'm sure he was happy with the work, you know, the Naked Gun stuff and whatever else he did. But I mean, you know, it's a little shame that he didn't get a chance to do other things because he was clearly capable. I mean, obviously he was in Forbidden Planet. You know, he's in a lot of great movies. Right. But you know, his whole career after Naked Gun was just this. Not Creepshow, it was just all silly stuff. And then, you know, he was capable of a lot more.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, though, he was so good at it. You know, and I think
it's because
he was so good at being a dramatic actor that he could parody that.
Yep. Oh, I rewatched Police Squad not that long ago. They're all on YouTube. God, that show is funny. Holy.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Oh, my Lord, does it hold up? It is. I laughed so hard at it again. It was like, geez, How did this even get on television? This is so funny. This is so well done. By the way, all of this stuff, not the stuff with the actors, but the B-roll, anything where you see the Jeep and you don't literally see the actor's face, was filmed in Ocean City, New Jersey.
Oh, wow.
George Romero mentioned that. I was so excited that I go down there all the time now, and I love it. And that made me very happy to know that at some point in 1982, George Romero, or maybe is at the very least his second unit, were down here shooting stuff for Creepshow. I was like, oh, that's all of all the towns, of all the seaside towns in New Jersey. They went to Ocean City. That made me very happy. I was hoping there was a plaque somewhere. We shot some B-roll. There we go. I love his old-timey language. My Lady Fair. Like, it's like he's adhering to some bizarre medieval moral code. Or something, you know, that's no longer valid, but yet he feels like this is what he's got to do.
Yeah, that's the thing. He's because he's he uh just to catch people up. They're at the beach now, and because he said he was going to take him to see the wife, and pulls a gun on him because he finds he takes him there and he says, "Oh, she's over there," or "Go look over there," and there's a hole there. So Ted Danson's character knows something is up.
It's a great shot. That shot, the shadow, the mm-hmm. shovel with him, and that's just a great composed shot. I mean, it's George Romero. No kidding, it was well directed, but just that's a simple shot, no comic book lighting, but just really well composed. There aren't a lot of guns in horror movies. You notice that? Like they're just knives. There's just not a lot of guns. I think that's just because it's not as horror. It's, you're not killing somebody up close with a knife the way you are with a gun. So there's just not a lot of guns in EC comics. There's just not that many guns.
No, and I think part of what makes it horrifying is how personal it usually is. Mm. And like you said, a gun is usually at a distance, or and also it's practically useless usually. Which we'll see later, actually, in this segment. But and even then, he's not really. I mean, he's threatening them, but he's mostly doing it just to get him to do what he wants him to do. Then you can see Becky. Yeah, and that's going to be Galen Ross.
From Dawn of the Dead.
Right, and you only see her on the TV. You actually don't see her, live in person, so to speak.
Well, you see her in the zombie makeup, but you don't see her face. Right. Yeah, she'd sort of mostly given up acting. I think she's gone on to become like a director and a documentarian and stuff like that. So she was mostly kind of going out of acting, which obviously she did this as a favor to her friend, George.
Right.
Wanted her to do. It looks deep, even for, we'll get to it, but even when we know it's fake, obviously, but it still looks horribly unpleasant. Like the water that they get thrown on. Now, they talk about this in the commentary, how they did this. And basically, Danson, as we see, he's up to his neck in sand, sitting on a chair. And so he's very comfortable. And there's a platform right under his neck that they can pile the sand onto, but his arms are underneath it. So if he ever wanted to move, he could just push it. So they said he's actually very, looks horribly uncomfortable, but he said he's actually very comfortable and that he could just move at any moment.
And safe from the sound of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. He could get up at any moment.
I could see where this would be an extremely dangerous thing.
Yeah. You know? Seriously.
I could cover you all the way up. Couldn't I, Harry? Just shoves that sand in his face.
It looks in his eyebrows and stuff.
Yeah. Because for the most part, Dan Danson's character here, Harry, he keeps his cool. Oh, man, just
he's smacking
him in the face. The
sand in his ears.
Yeah. For the most part, he Harry's keeping on here's the crab. That's the only time he actually really loses it when the crab.
I love the crab turns right to the camera. Hi, everybody. That's great.
Don't look at the camera, crab.
Good crab acting. Well done.
Yeah.
Well done, crab.
But yeah, for the most part, look at that wire spilling out of the back of the Jeep as Lizzie Nielsen drives back up. You found a friend, Harry. Yeah, he starts singing "I'm Just Wild About Harry."
He's singing old timey songs. It's very, very, from a different era kind of thing.
God, no and shout TV out to Leslie like Nielsen. He's hauling that TV out of the Jeep like it's nothing. No, yeah. I know those things were heavy.
Yeah. Oh man, I used to carry. Yeah, all TVs used to. It was a massive undertaking carrying a TV from room to room.
Oh my god. He's over here plugging stuff in. How long is that extension cord?
I know. He brought a generator with him. He's got this generator to run. There, that's generator what it is. Yeah, he's got the generator running in the background.
There you go.
Man, showtime!
And there's Galen Ross up to her neck in sand also with the tide coming in.
Yeah. And look, this just looks unpleasant for the actor. We know it's for the character, but this just looks like, mind? We're going to bury your neck and then we're going to throw water on? Like, really? Yeah.
And see, there, I mean, it comes like right into her face.
Yeah. I mean, even though she can get up and get away at any moment, she's still, they got to get the take. So it's like, all right, and God, you hope you got that one or two times, because it's it's miserable. This vision isn't on play, it's on record. You're both part of my home movies. You know that that Richard here has like the Faces of Death collection. You know, like that's his, he's into all that stuff.
Well, you know, later on, he's kind of flipping through his collection.
Yeah.
And I just wonder what the hell's on those tapes.
It's other women that he's done this to. It's other, yeah, his other affairs that he's squelched.
Well, and we see a camera as they drive up, you know, a camera trained on the beach, and later as he goes to his house, they'll show cameras in different corners of the house, including the bedroom.
Yep.
Which is kind of implying that that's how he finds out about the affair, but also, you know, like I said, what is on those tapes? What is he keeping that he actually wants to watch again? It's insane.
Yeah, he's a very troubled individual, this guy. Yeah, this is awful. It's just making here that one.
Look at that.
There. Look. That is over her head. The water is over her head. That is.
And right into her face. I mean, that can't be easy.
Gail and Ross must have a very good relationship with George Romero.
Yeah. And here's Leslie Nielsen explaining to Ted Danson that, hey, you have a chance as the tide comes in, if you can hold your breath, you might be able to loosen yourself from the sand. Mm. It's getting late, Harry. I'll have to trot along now.
Now, they established earlier that he owns this whole section.
This whole beach,
beach, so no one's going to come. It's a private beach, and no one's going to... There, you can almost see the little thing kind of lifting up and down.
Moving a little bit, yeah.
Yeah. But he mentions that that he owns this entire section, so no one will be coming by. That's how he's able to get away with this, and no one ever stumbles on him.
Right, because, yeah, no matter how well Ted Danson's doing, Leslie Nielsen's doing much better.
Yeah.
I mean, he can just afford to waste TVs and cameras and stuff. That stuff was not cheap in those days.
No, yeah. Yeah, I mean, right, this is the kind of ahead of the curve, you know? I mean, VHS tapes were certainly in circulation by 82, but not that many people had them, you know? No, like, you were VCRs still, VCRs were still, yeah. And they were huge, you know? Giant decks, you know. So yeah, this was still a little on the early side. Yeah, the TV gets shorted out. There we go.
Did you? Well, you worked in a video store. I'm sure you remember the ones that you used to be able to rent out.
Oh, sure.
Encased in that big plastic thing with a handle.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. We did not do that. Our store didn't offer that, but other stores in the area did.
Yeah.
So yeah, there was one store that rented you a LaserDisc player.
Oh, wow.
For people who had laser discs. And I used to use that because I had laser discs, but I didn't have a player. So I would rent the player from the store.
Yeah.
There we go. Now, Sanya, he's recording everything. I mean, you think about now, you know, this is what our life is now. All this monitoring and, you know.
Yeah. There's another camera, two cameras in the house.
Nice house. Nice house.
Yeah. I like the way they use plants to make it look, you know, filled.
I love that he's got a Buddha. Yeah. Talk about somebody
bedroom.
Probably not living up to the Buddha's precepts.
Okay. And see, and there's his bank of monitors for the whole house.
He's got a sweet setup here. He's going to press a button in a second.
Yeah.
And man, that is like, here we go. He's going to press this button under the thing. Oh, look at that. Oh, my God. That is awesome.
That's like something you'd see out of the Batcave.
Yeah, seriously. Oh, man. Oh, that is. Yeah. And I love that the button is like hidden.
Yeah.
That's so cool. It's like he's making sure nobody finds these things.
Yeah. Now he's watching Ted Danson and Galen Ross still stuck in the sand. Tide coming in.
He's going to look right in the camera. Making himself a drink. Sure. Yeah. Why not?
And enjoy himself while he's
watching. Look at this little dance.
He's actually dancing.
Look at this little. Dee, 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 dee. Yeah. That's how much of a psycho he is. He's doing this even though there's nobody there to see him do it.
Yeah.
You know?
Laughing. He's enjoying this murder.
Yeah. Oh.
And I mean, I would say this is probably the most sadistic segment in the movie.
Oh, sure.
Because, I mean, it is just so over the top and just so slow how he murders these people. You know, it's just crazy.
Oh, look at that. Now look, he is fully underwater
Galen.
At that
point. That's Galen. Yeah, that's her.
Oh, is that Galen? Okay. Yeah. Okay.
She was dead. Further up the beach. Yeah, she's gone.
Okay. Here we go. Oh.
And this is Ted Danson realizing that he's...
Now here's this great... There's a great shot coming up, which is like a lot in Creepshow, simultaneously horrifying and very funny.
But look at that anger on his face.
Yeah.
He's getting mad now.
Here. He feels bad about it for just a second. Yeah. No. I'm fine. I'm down with this plan. Here we go. He's going to sort of break the fourth wall a little bit.
Right at the camera.
Right into the camera.
You hear me, Richard? I'm going to get you. And then water. You got to hold your breath there, Harry. You got to hold your breath.
There. This
is a great shot.
That is. This really holds on this a long time.
It does. Like, Ted Danson underwater, seaweed, and that red light coming up behind him, his hair going straight up.
There's this big bubble right there. Oh,
yeah.
Oof. Now, apparently, there were scuba people just off camera, and there were people below him, and you know, he was obviously under no harm, but still, it's just like,
yeah.
It's a scary shot.
You know, I keep saying it, but that must have been tough. That this segment itself must have been a tough shoot.
Yeah. Oh, Romero talks about that, like, that's just that scene right there of the TV buried in the sand. He said they had to bury it, but then put the sand back in a way that it looked like it had not been disturbed.
Yeah.
And like, I'm like, that's a simple thing. And yet you're like, oh, that is kind of complicated, isn't it? Like, you know, because if you bury something in the sand and then you push the sand back, it looks like you've done that.
Right.
Oh, right there, that too.
There's the bucket. Yeah. And here's Leslie Nielsen trying to convince himself that the tide took them out, because everything is back on the beach, the TV, the bucket, everything else, but not his wife and her lover.
Mm-hmm. Obviously windy today when they shot this. Yeah.
I love that sweater, by the way. That's a nice sweater.
It is a nice sweater. Looks very, very comfy. He's gone. Very nice. He's trying to convince himself.
Yeah.
He's gone. Tide took him.
Richard.
Now, I've never noticed that in the subtitles. It shows. I never heard that.
It's like it's. They do it really well, actually. That ghostly voice is like right under the surf.
Oh, I didn't notice that. I've never. Yeah. That's funny. I'll have to listen for that next time. We have the subtitles on, so we can.
There's footprints coming out of the ocean.
There we go. Are you bothered at all by the fact that there's no? This sounds so silly. Explanation, like how are they able to? Why are they coming back? Like, are they? You know what I mean? Or is just it's fine? It's just the way these stories go.
No, I don't need to know. I mean, if it's supernatural, that's enough of an explanation for me. You know, I mean, how many stories have we heard? Traditional stories where, you know, a witch is being burned at the stake and she says, "I curse you."
Or, oh,
you know,
there's the ashtray, by the way.
There's the ashtray.
Oh, I forgot to mention in the Jordy Vera. I did the same thing. Yeah, look, there's this videotape collection.
Yeah, where is
that? I rolled a sports.
Sports again.
Snuff films. Faces of Death, volumes 1, 2, 3.
He thinks he hears something. One of the monitors is out.
Mondo Kane. What do I got here? Okay, good stuff.
But no, it doesn't bother me at all, because, like I said, I don't. If you just tell me, oh, it's, you know, supernatural, that's enough for me. I don't need a whole big explanation. Does that bother you?
No, I would have been fun if they had just sort of tried to come up with something as to why, how are they able to do this? Like the first segment, he's brought to life maybe by the whiskey. And then the second one is a sci-fi story. And then the crate is not supernatural. It's a monster story. And then the fifth one, we could talk about that when we get to it, about whether how much of that is really happening or not. But no, it doesn't. No, it does not bother me. I just thought it would have been interesting if they had thrown something in of like, oh, okay. One of them is into witchcraft. Hey, just something. Say, as I'm saying it out loud, I realize it's ridiculous. That's not what this is about. Who cares?
Well, I think
you just want to see him necklace. Get killed by these two.
Yeah, he takes that out. That is quite a necklace.
There. That is what a is hell that? Of a necklace.
Wings on a. I don't know what that is.
It looks like a key or something. It's probably a key to like some porn or something.
It's probably like a key party thing or something.
Yeah.
But he, it doesn't. I mean, I kind of take it that it's, you know, a dying man's declaration of revenge, and that's enough to bring him back?
That's true, right. He does say, I'm going to get you. That is kind of his final statement. So that's enough. That's enough for the mist coming up to the front door.
In, representing our not-so-happy couple.
That's a cool-looking fish.
Yeah, lionfish.
I like that. That's a lionfish. Okay. I should know these things. As an Aquaman fan, I should know these things. Here we go. Now, supposedly, not supposedly, Ted Danson told the story. He would know that he had a very small daughter at this age, at this time, and he warned her, like, she was going to come to the set this day, and he warned her, Daddy's going to be in scary makeup. You know, don't get scared. You know, it's fine. And apparently he comes out looking like he does, and the small daughter takes one look and goes, oh, hi, Dad.
Not phased at all.
So, okay. He didn't get his hair wet.
And increasingly, you know, that Leslie Nielsen's hair, even if it got wet, I don't think it would change a single hair out of place. Some shadows on the wall here.
Yeah. Great sound effects.
Yeah.
Great sounds in this movie. As I'm going through it, I'm like, God, yeah, there's so much memorable sound effects artistry. I don't know who won the Oscar that year, but if they were doing that in 1982, but man, I'm sure, you know, this movie didn't get nominated for anything, but it deserves it because it's really memorable sounds. Really memorable.
Whoever it was the wrong person. It should have been this guy. But I love that the noises are subtle, just enough to make Leslie Nielsen come out, and, you know, because he's already paranoid now, and he's like, who's out there? You hear something in the house. And as the couple is walking through the house, you can hear kind of a squish, squish.
Mm-hmm. Wentworth?
There's the gun again.
Yeah. Now, he's already assuming it's Wentworth. You're assuming it's Harry.
Right.
Like, he's like, all right, somehow he's escaped.
Yeah, it's like he's convinced himself that, you know, maybe he was able to escape.
Mm-hmm.
All that seaweed.
Dutch angle here. We're Dutch angling it big time.
Mm-hmm. And I have to tell you, look at that angle. Jeez, I love it though, and I think it fits this.
Yeah, it's perfect.
It fits it so well.
The perfect is aesthetically. It's just right on the money. Yeah.
He's going to the door, reaching for the handle, holding the gun in the wrong hand. That's not going to help him. Leslie Nielsen's listening. Throws it open.
Whammo!
Look at that lighting again.
Look at that. It's great. There they got these lime green,
bluish
green thing there.
Very, very oceany.
Yep. Again, the throaty voice again, like they're waterlogged. You know, everyone, where are you? Here we go. Bang. Boom. And then
he shoots his wife in the head. Yeah, I love that
water just comes out.
Yeah, like this green seawater just comes out and just keeps coming.
He's gonna fire again. Yeah. Didn't work the first time. Maybe it'll work a second time. Maybe it'll work a third
and
time.
And I didn't, it's showtime. Boom. Another one.
Right in the head there.
Here we come, Richard. Go to the beach. He empties the gun. Oh, he's about to pull Superman and throw it at him.
Superman, yeah. There you go.
Oh, he does throw it at him.
He does throw. Great lighting. Look at that. Oh, it's so beautiful. Face.
He screams, runs to another room.
All right. There we go. He's got a lock on a bed. Look at that. That's a weird lock to have on your bathroom door. Like the old-timey apartment lock. Here, I'm safe. He's perfectly fine. There's no way they got in here.
Yeah.
They're not magical beings that can transport themselves into strange places. Whoa!
Right behind them. That lighting again.
Yeah, look at that. I love that he immediately just starts going insane. I love that he starts to laugh because he's now, that's it, he's done. His brain is just shutting down. It's terrific.
Again, a great piece of acting from Leslie Nielsen to make that transition. You know, he's screaming and then now he's just kind of... How great is it that you can actually kind of still recognize Ted Danson and all that?
Look at that.
It's crazy. Love those swirly backgrounds and
everything. Look at the colors on that. Oh yeah.
You know, and it's, you know, obviously it's not a great from there, and Leslie Nielsen's now in it up to his neck.
Very long time. Yeah. I love this. They freeze this at exactly the right there.
Yeah, that face.
He's like, oh, shit. Yeah. I'm going to growl, man. Fantastic. So much fun. So,
I had to do, you know what that lightning actually reminds me of all the time? And I mean, this is kind of a silly comparison because of the movie says The Crate. It reminds me a little bit of Suspiria.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. All the Italian horror cinema. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, the giallo. Yeah. Totally.
Here we go. Now this, I, you know, we're not, well, you know, maybe we'll wait till the fifth story. We're going to rate the stories. I'm going to rate the stories, but this is my favorite. I think this is most people's favorite. Again, it's the longest. It's like something like 30 minutes. It's by, you know, by far the longest.
Right.
The cast is so distinguished.
Right.
But man, this is just, it's one of those things where this is so good that part of me is like, boy, wouldn't it have been great if this had just been a whole movie?
Yeah.
It's so good. But then I'm like, yeah, but maybe it's because it doesn't wear out its welcome is why it's so good. Yeah. Maybe if you tried to, you know, pad it to 80 minutes, it would lose something. Maybe it's the fact that here we go. Adrian Barbeau.
Adrian Barbeau.
The marvelous Adrian Barbeau.
Oh,
I love her.
Who
so
among
much.
Us did not have a crush on Adrian Barbeau?
Good Lord. Swamp Thing this year, too. Yeah. So 1982, good year.
Tabby and Richard, who are named after his Stephen King's wife, Tabitha, and his pseudonym of Richard Bachman.
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, that's great. That's great.
And there's Fritz Weaver.
Fritz Weaver and Hal Holbrook.
Great Hal Holbrook.
She's so awful. I love it. Oh, my God. She's kind of playing the same. I think she's in continuity. She's the same woman who is Rodney Dangerfield's wife in Back to School. Same loudmouth, crass, you know.
Yeah. Oh,
she's so great.
I mean, she plays this so well because she just, I mean, is just so loud and just so brassy,
not fit
but not in a
with
good
this
way.
Crowd. Yeah.
And is not even trying to. She doesn't. No. She doesn't care about this crowd at all.
Look, no one has got a color on in this whole party. Everybody is grays and you know tans, and she's in this magenta red. I love that look that guy gives the two of them. At least she bumps that guy out of the way. That's great. Poor Hal Holbrook.
Oh man, he is so handpicked in this movie.
Oh man, just Fritz so Weaver is doing an Oscar level performance of playing the guy who isn't happy with his best friend's wife, but can't quite say it because it's his wife, but it's his best friend too. So he's kind of like, I really hate that wife of yours.
And just you know, Adrian Barbeau is Billy. Just call me Billy. Yeah, she is just bad mouthing everybody, mostly her husband, to anybody who'll listen at this party.
Yep. Now she had the line about etiquette crotch. She says, which doesn't make sense. What's etiquette crotch? In the original soundtrack, she says the C word, and apparently they went into lay. I guess they felt somebody at maybe Warner Brothers, because in the commentary, Romero doesn't even know that happened. Romero was like, "What?" And like the guy narrating is like. You know, they dubbed it, and you could tell it's dubbed. You could tell that they dubbed it to a lighter word because I guess they felt the C word was just a little too heavy for this movie.
For American audiences, especially.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of Romero, this is his backyard.
Is it really?
This is the backyard of his house. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. The university that they, that these two guys teach at is Horlicks University, which is actually, Carnegie Mellon.
Oh, geez. Okay.
Yeah. Wow. Well, and there's a reason for that. So Romero, Ted Danson, the special effects guy, Tom Savini, John Harrison, the composer, and costume designer Barbara Anderson are all alumni of Carnegie Mellon.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, there you go.
And so everything here you see in the basement and the labs and all that, that's Carnegie Mellon.
That's great. That's great. Right, you know, save some money, pull some strings, you know, call in some favors. Because this was originally an independent production. It was they made it through like a separate production company and then Warner Brothers picked it up. But this was not, you know, they didn't have, a lot. You know, like a lot of money at their disposal. They had to kind of be judicious with
So the janitor has found the crate.
1834.
June 19th, 1834. I spent a whole day trying to see if Jennifer Carpenter and that date meant anything, and I could not find a single thing.
It's so funny that the word here we go. Now we're getting into that. We realize that And he has some, Henry has some fantasies.
Yeah.
Of killing. What's wrong now?
Bam.
Oh. Blammo.
And that is a pretty graphic.
That's. I think he got that gun from the Dirty Harry movie that he did in the 70s. Yeah. The Enforcer, I think he's in. I love the reaction. Oh, nice shot.
Little golf claps. Yep.
I love his like, please. Oh, sure. Yeah. Thank you. Oh, gee. Thank you. Bullseye.
But then the fantasy ends.
Hey, and there we go. Huh?
God, she's so mean.
So awful to him. Adrienne Barbeau was on the short list of people to whom, if she makes an appearance at like a convention or one of those things, I will make a special trip to go see her. Only a few people. Tom Atkins is another one that if he was at a show that I could drive to within a reasonable distance, I would go just for him. And she's one of those. I would just be like, I have to get a photo with Adrienne Barbeau. I just loved her so much.
Yeah.
I mean, God, you know, what a career, you know? I mean, Escape from New York, again, Swamp Thing, and Back to School. I mean, it's just great. Now, again, it's funny that it says, isn't it interesting that it's a woman's name on the crate? Like, I mean, not that that's like, but that's just unusual. You would normally expect in this time it to probably be a guy's name, and yet it's a woman's name. That feels like a conscious choice by somebody.
Yeah.
To make it a woman. Now, of course, the name Carpenter, you know, it jumps out at you because you're like, right. Well, there's a thing in a crate from an Arctic expedition. And this is the same damn year that the thing came out.
Right.
You know, so you can't help but say Carpenter, Arctic expedition. Okay. You know,
yeah. But, well, apparently there's some speculation that it's a reference to that, but I don't know how it could be. Because, like you said, it came out the same year.
Yeah. They would have had to been doing this already, you know?
Yeah.
But right. I mean, you just can't help it when you see when you at this point, when you watch a horror movie and there's a character or a setting that has a name that's familiar, you know that it's
right.
Yeah, you know, you're like, oh, okay, it's a reference to so and so.
Yeah, Mike the janitor.
I love he's telling this thing. Boring story about buffing the floor, and Fritz Weaver's like, I don't care.
Oh, then he found his quarter because that's how this whole thing started. He flipped a quarter. He lost it in the under the stairs. There's Fritz Weaver.
The Coke machine.
And this whole thing is locked up with heavy chains, which should have been the first.
Seriously. Yeah. it's such a fun idea that this thing was buried in a building like this and then just forgotten about. Like, that's such a fun, and it's so great. Contrary to what I said earlier about, like, I wish there had been maybe some explanation as to why they're capable of, you know, coming back to life. I love that you don't ever find out. I love that it's just something happened in the last 150 years where this thing got brought back, shoved under a stairwell, and then just forgotten about. Like, no, like over the years of time, no one's ever said, you know, maybe leave a memo. Hey, under the stairwell, there's a box. Don't open it. Just leave it
there. So what do you think this is? What do you think the creature is?
I assume it's like an abominable snowman kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And it says Arctic expedition, so I assume it's like a Yeti of some sort. I mean, again, how it could possibly live 150 years without food or water.
That's my theory. Yeah, my theory is that it's a Wendigo.
Okay.
You know, Wendigos live forever and they love to eat people.
All right. Well, there you go.
So who knows? But anyway, Tom Savini, it's just this was his first shot at making an animatronic creature. And man, he just hit it out of the park. Yeah, Fluffy. And he just hit it out of the park. I think he did a great job on it.
Yeah. Oh, it's the ridiculous amount of razor sharp teeth. It's a monster from hell. You know, it's just like, this is not anything your brain can really.
Yeah. And I love the way they build it up because they don't just like immediately flip the box open. They have to go get tools.
It's like a whole thing. And we got to get it and pull out the nails and yada, yada, yada.
It really builds up. And here's Billy complaining about her husband and his
lower jaw quivering. He's just so, look at him.
Yes, Billy. Now, what classes is she going to?
I wonder about that. What the hell is this woman? Probably like Kegel classes or something. Like some sort of really something related to sex. Here we go. Whammo. All right.
Choking her with his tie.
But yes, Billy. Yes, Billy.
Oh, Henry. What would you do without me?
You know, when you think about it, it's probably not classes. It's probably she's lying to him and she's going to meet a guy in a hotel, probably.
Maybe. I wouldn't be surprised.
You know, she tells him, I'm going to, you know, whatever. I'm going to go to my book, my book club, but she's meeting a guy at a bar to go off to a hotel. She's meeting Harry.
Yeah.
Meeting Harry.
Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, this is great. Yeah, you're right. This is, they really do stretch this out, but in the best way possible. Yeah. You know, and like it's a whole, you're right. They don't just flip the top open. It's, we got to pry it open, and then we got to pull the nails, and we got to hammer them back down to pull them out. And it's, you know, even then we don't get the whole thing off. We got to get like just, yeah, they really do build great anticipation with this thing. Mm-hmm.
And some neat details too, like those nails are old school nails. And the way they kind of react when they, like, they at one point, you know, they get it open enough that I guess Mike the janitor can take a whiff and he's like, woof.
Yeah, look at those. Yeah, those are like old timey.
Yeah.
I think they mentioned on the commentary that this crate, the actual prop, is owned by, I think they said, Greg Nicotero now from Walking Dead. And like, his kid uses it as a toy chest or something. Imagine, you know, like you're like horror royalty that, you know, your kids can just.
Well, I think, didn't Greg Nicotero visit the set as a kid himself, the set of this movie?
I don't know. I've never heard that. They don't mention it in the commentary. That'd be good. Yeah. Can you imagine that?
I want to say that I read that somewhere.
I love the crate of dust.
Oof. Yeah. Then I'll just start coughing. Yeah. Poor Mike the janitor.
He's not that bright. He is not that bright. You don't put your hand in a box that has not been opened in 150 years because you saw something shiny. Yeah. And then especially you heard the chirping sound.
Yeah.
We're going to get the shot. They're going to get the reverse.
I mean, he had the sense to call, you know, a professor or someone in
there
charge.
There you go.
The eyes. And he puts his hands in it. Oh, there's that purple and red light there.
Yeah, Mike is not bright.
Help me, Doc.
Yeah, the red lighting. Now Fluffy's, I guess, just chewing on his hand, I guess.
Yeah, the whole thing flips over.
There we go. He's going to suck him up. I love that they address it later, the idea that where did all these people go?
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, Fluffy is about the size of a person, or, you know, maybe a little bigger. We never really see him fully extended, but he's a relative, you know, he's not a giant. So how does he physically eat three people?
Yeah.
There he is.
The first full shot of him.
There we go.
He's pulling Mike the janitor in that box.
Oh, the blood's going to.
Which is pretty, this is, you know, maybe one of the more graphic scenes.
Oh, sure, look at the blood
pouring down, and but with the lighting, it's, you know, that could be any color, which is pretty, you know, it's I love that about George Romero. He has the money, but he still thinks like an independent filmmaker. So he tries his tricks where he can.
Okay,
here comes the grad student Charlie.
Fritz Weaver is so great here.
He is already on the verge of just breaking down.
It was a fucking. You know,
we have to get campus security.
Now they did again. They get great screenwriting. They did layer this in where earlier they mentioned this kid is still at school, and they said he's going to be like a Nobel. He's going to win the Nobel Prize before he's 20. So that's why the school is empty, but he's still there because he's cracking the books.
He's just coming back from dinner because Mike, the janitor, actually sent him off for a burger because he said if he didn't, he would never eat.
That's right. He says that. That's right. Yep.
Yeah. Of course, he's not being very helpful now because Dexter is freaking out because he just saw this creature eat someone, and Charlie doesn't quite buy it.
I love that the box is moving.
Yeah.
And we don't see that, like, you know, is Fluffy pushing the box from the outside, or is he in the box and he's just kind of like jiggling it?
I think that's what they mentioned later, that he must have moved it back under the stairs because that's where he's felt safe for so long.
Felt safe, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and here's Charlie telling the professor that that they're not gonna believe him, that there's a monster, that it's that he probably just freaked out and killed a janitor. I gotta tell you, Charlie's kind of a jerk here.
A little bit. I hate the word toot. I just hate that word. And the fact that he says it twice.
Yeah.
Just bothers
me. And why is he skipping away like that?
Yeah, he's not taking it seriously. I mean, of course, why would he? You know, I mean, a guy just said a monster just ate the janitor. You'd be like, okay, dude. Right. But so
you go with another horror trope. You know, no one turns on the light in this hallway.
No,
it's just dark. The only light is coming from the windows. And Hornets University, it makes another appearance in a way in Creepshow 2. Some of the students are from Horlicks.
Oh, in the raft?
Yeah.
Okay.
Charlie sees all the blood.
Wow, a payphone. Remember those?
Oh my god.
Remember, and the back then, look at the payphone had its own little room, you know?
Yeah.
It's its own little cabinet. It got out.
I like that the doctor has the professor here has the sense to not step in the blood.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, he says, and the way this track looks, it goes right back under the stairs.
I think I'd still call the cops. I think I'd take my chances that they wouldn't immediately assume I did anything. I think I'd say, look, I
and that grate is right there. Why don't they just put the grate back?
Yeah, put the grate back. Yeah, at the very least, put the grate back. Yeah, why do you need to get the flashlight? Like, what? Yeah, why?
But look at that. That's a
big flashlight. Yeah. My God.
Those old cop flashlights.
That's the thing that Luke threw over his shoulder when Rey goes to visit him at the beginning of Last Jedi. Us. There we go. Now, is there a foot in there or is it just the shoe? I don't know if we, I think the way it moves, I think it's just the shoe.
Yeah,
when I first watched it, a bunch of times I thought, oh, with the foot, like the whole, it's like a sever. You just cut, but then I think maybe you see it and it's just the shoe. Yeah. So it's not quite as grisly as.
Yeah, no.
Fluffy doesn't leave anything to waste.
Yeah, I think Fluffy's a member of the Clean Plate Club.
This is all the buffalo that Fluffy does.
Yeah,
this is so fun. This is every time I watch this segment, I'm like, good Lord, this is just directed within an inch of its life. You know, mm-hmm. It's so tense. It's so goofy. But, it really is like, God, this is just so well done. And, Stephen King, written well by Stephen King. Yeah.
And Charlie wants to measure the bite marks so you can see how big it is. And
I felt sweaty here. This is a sweaty movie. This would have been up there. The Barflies and Cheers. This is a very sweaty movie.
Yeah. Well, then, Professor Stanley here is just barely holding on.
Oh, look at that. The shadow. Oh, he suckered you. Now, this is pretty graphic. That's bad. But then the biting of the neck is.
Shoulder. Yeah.
Look at he's still
Charlie's
trying.
Charlie's fighting. Charlie's trying. He has that wrench. Wham.
Bango. And now you've just pissed him off.
Yep.
Here we go. And he's going to bite into his throat. That is the big gore effect.
Yeah.
Oh, he's got. Oh,
he's trying to get away.
He tries. Look at him. Fritz Weaver tries. There we go.
Oh, right in the neck. Oh. And look at that. Those bite marks just drag across his.
Oh, and then flash across face.
Yeah. And there goes Dexter.
Dexter. I keep calling him Fritz Weaver. His character's name is Dexter. Oh, this is great. Now, I mentioned earlier my friend, my high school friend Doug, him and I love this movie, and he said he always does the meteor shit. But his favorite line is coming up. This is the line he always quotes in a moment. Here we go. This has got the. Imagine he drove in that condition. Even if he's like 5 minutes away, he still got in his car, stopped at stoplights,
holding on to that shoe.
Holding on to that bloody shoe.
Yeah. And he's worried that he's going to get blamed for two murders now.
I love this. Good God.
Someone
do that. It was in the movies. I love the way he leans into that line. It was in the movies.
The movies. It's that thing in the crate.
Oh, here we go. This is the lab that I don't even know what it was. And he's about to care. The line is coming up where he says, when he starts talking about the student. Yeah, the men that Mike Ambers, Anderson Hall, Charlie Garrison. Here we go. He went better than the bite marks, Henry. Oh, I guess he got his chance. My friend Doug loves that line. He just like never misses an opportunity to go, I guess he got his chance. He just, to this day, 40 years later, he's still quoting that line.
It's a great line.
Yeah. It's just the way it's this half insane, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he's on the verge of a breakdown here. He's, you know, Dexter's nice, not doing well.
Nice house. Henry's got a nice house. I mean, he's a college professor. I guess he's got,
yeah,
you know, he's got some good money. That's why Billy married him. Yeah. He's got money, you know. That's why she's there.
Yeah, see, Dexter's the one who has the idea of taking the crate to the quarry.
Look, he's thinking. The wheels are turning. He's like, oh, shit, this might solve all my problems. This might be a two birds with one stone kind of thing. There's a giant monster that nobody knows about. Yeah, now he's got the plan, right? Yeah. He's already, all right. He's going to go get the... By the way, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, I like the way he says that I have to use the facilities. You know, he's gone for like a long time.
He's in his house. Like, he's in the bathroom. Like, with the facilities. In every movie where they need it, characters have medicine that will knock someone out.
Yeah.
I don't have anything like that in my house. I never have.
Allergy medicine.
Yeah. Like, I have NyQuil, maybe, but like every movie, like, look, everybody in every movie that they need it, somebody's got this stuff that knocks you out in 30 seconds. It's like, where do these people get these things, get these drugs from?
You know, in these days, too, I mean, everyone was like using Quaaludes, and maybe that's what it was.
It was a different time. There you go. He's out.
Dex is out. And right in
there's the ashtray. There's the ashtray there.
Yeah. You know, someone somewhere has to be making those ashtrays.
Oh, you would think so. Yeah. I mean, sure. I mean, that's the whole subculture of Mondo posters and all the replicas and all that stuff.
Are you into that sort of thing at all, Rob? Do you collect movie memorabilia?
No, it's more just space. You know what I mean? Like, I have a few choice things, but no, just because, again, I just don't have a lot of space for stuff. I have said, I think I've mentioned this on some other show we talked about or something, but like, if I had unlimited wall space and I had money to throw at it, I would collect soundtrack vinyl album art, because like the stuff from the 60s, like, that stuff is gorgeous. Like, those paintings, it doesn't matter that the movie, I don't, you know, My Fair Lady or like Sound of Music, I don't care that the music is, whether I listen to the music or not, but the art on album covers of soundtracks are just, to me, some of the most beautiful movie art. And I would love, and you could buy record albums, you know, cheap, because I don't care about the condition, and I would love to just frame them and have them on my wall. But I mean, you know, that's framing things is expensive, and you can only have so much wall space. So it's one of those things where once I build my giant podcasting empire and I'm living in a house this size, then I will put that in. Contrary to rumor, I am not Richie Rich, but he's got that broom there. He's going to pull it. Why is everybody obsessed with that flashlight? Who cares? What are you going to do? What difference does it make? Who cares?
That's got to be at least like, what, 6D batteries in there?
Yeah. $20 every time that thing burns out. Oh, God.
Exactly.
Jesus. I got to go down to Target. I got to buy 6 of these things.
I'm not just going to let that go. Speaking of album art, I actually have the vinyl for Phantom of the Paradise.
Oh. Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And one of the reasons I bought that was for the album art.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so great. You know, I'm going to sound very old now, but you know, that we started losing that with cassettes and that sort of thing, which is a real shame.
Yeah.
But you know, and it's still out there if you want to find it, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, and once a lot of these dealers just said, just put heads, you know, just put heads on things, big, especially movies, just put movie star heads, just photos of heads of the stars. Don't do anything artistic, because we want a Blockbuster has to buy 50 copies. And that was the way that, unfortunately, the way that went. There's a movie out coming out soon as we're recording this called The Outfit. I don't even know what it's about, but it has a Saul Bass type poster. Mm-hmm. And I kind of want to see the movie just to support the poster, you know, because it's like somebody took a flyer on that one. Somebody had to sell that. And they did. And so I'm like, I want to support that artistic choice. The very artsy poster. I don't know if the movie's any good or whatever, but so here we go. Now he's explaining all this to Billy. Great music, by the way. We haven't really talked about the music. The music is the tinkling piano. It's really great the way he's setting this up, and she's not taking any of it seriously. She's of course a little pie eyed. I love this. There, just the amount of blood that comes off the thing. Look how much blood is coming off that table.
Yeah, I mean, Henry is spending like it's. That's got to be a good, I don't know what, a couple of hours work.
Yep.
To
get that's a lot of blood to clean up. It's a lot. Here, doesn't she put Coca-Cola in the milk? Isn't that what she mixes something in the milk? And it's like
the milk and Pepsi, like Laverne and Shirley.
Oh.
Yeah, it's she's awful. Reading the note and basically. Saying that Dex has done something terrible to
a co-ed, yeah.
Yeah. And she's laughing.
There, what? She's got... No, it's not Coke, but it's... Okay, it's like whiskey or something.
Yeah.
But in with milk?
Oh. Is that like a White Russian? I don't even... What's in a White Russian? I don't even know.
Look, I love that her reactions are great.
Yeah.
But this is a long note, too, by the way. Yeah, he wrote like 5 pages of the...
Really? No, I was just going to say, I think Billy's probably the kind of person to put alcohol in everything.
Probably. To quote a line from 30 Rock, it's Jenna Maroney soaking her tampons in vodka.
Oh, my God. Look at that. And she just, oh, man. Adrienne Barbeau just pulls off such a mean face. I mean,
that's a face for 1940s film noir. She never got to do that, you know? But, I mean, man, her face, she would have been great as one of those gum-chewing dames, you know, in a 1940s movie.
Yeah. This is, you know, Adrienne Barbeau, and this is definitely abroad. You know? Yeah.
Oh, man, it's great. Here we go.
Oh, and you know what that, if, you know, you just click that Saul Bass for The Outfit that you mentioned?
Yeah.
That's probably based on the book by Richard Stark.
Oh, okay.
You know, also known as Donald Westlake.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, well, it's cool. All right.
So that would make sense.
Every time I've seen a movie that has a unique poster, I have made an effort to at least go see it in the theater because I'm like, I just, having done a lot of graphic design work in my time, I know how hard it is to get that stuff past editorial boards and art directors because they just don't want to go for anything that's unique. They want it to be as cookie cutter as possible. I don't mean to besmirch every art director.
No, it's true.
But it just, you know, you don't... Every design I ever came up with, you know, I would show somebody 5 alts and they would pick my least favorite of the 5 that I came up with. It was always the way it worked. So when a movie poster slips through that is stylish over just putting heads, I always feel like, you got my $8, you know, I'll go. So it's
what
not
do you,
much.
What do you think of Jack Kamen's poster for this, for Creepshow?
Well, the original, I mean, the cover art from the comic book is great. The kid reading the thing. And then there was the actual poster. I kind of wish they'd stuck with the one with the kid reading the comic book. I think it's a little more illustrative, no pun intended, of the style of the movie. but the poster of the ghoul at the box office is terrific. It's a great image. I think it's pretty effective, And the tagline, the most fun you'll ever have being scared. Yeah, that's pretty much exactly right. You know, that's exactly, it tells you the tone that you're getting.
Right. Billy has arrived at the university.
I love, she's excited. Oh, Henry.
Yeah.
Did he beat her?
Look at that, like, delight on her face.
She's a little turned on. Yeah. She would get along great with Richard in the previous segment.
Probably.
I love this. Look, I love the way his mouth.
He killed who first?
He's trying not to laugh. That's great. Why are you laughing?
Yeah. It's easy if you just see for yourself, Wilma. What are you laughing about? You can just, that voice
so shrill. She has no self-awareness apparently, because she can't figure out that he's, I guess, because he's so milquetoast.
Yeah He says, "You're hysterical, Henry." You know,
he's taken her shit for so long that you know, this turn is not anything she could have expected. Mm-mm. An entirely new experience.
And he's actually getting physical with her here.
Yeah.
Get her under those stairs.
I like that. That's a nice detail. The lab's the other way. I like that. That's a good detail. She's been there. Yeah. She knows. Yeah. She knows where the lab is. She knows something's a little wrong.
Yeah. She's abrasive, but she's not dumb.
Yeah. And that's a great, nice little, again, good little screenwriting by Stephen King. She's all curled up, you know, like a baby. What did he do to her?
That is one thing you can say about Stephen King. He has a great ear for dialogue.
It's not too terribly florid. It's not too terribly clever. And I mean that in a good way. These are people talking like, I like that she brought her drink with her, by the way.
I know.
She brought that with, she drove with it. And we see her drinking. Here we go. This is probably as great as the segment is. This is probably the best part of where he's you bitch. Stop it. Now, of course, you know, you're thinking, okay, this is what's going to happen. And then they do this beat, which is just dinner time.
Yeah.
Banging her against the thing. Wake up. It goes on so long that you're like, wait, this is not, here we go. This is her line read on this is fantastic.
You start to wonder if he's a part of the Jordy Verrill family there.
That was just great, Henry. That was just great.
She's so, just so demeaning to him.
She's gonna hit him with her purse. Classic old lady, 1940s style kind of, you know, lady hitting somebody with a purse. So here we go. Now she gets vicious.
Yeah.
She gets vicious. Your barnyard exhibit. Oof.
Sheep's eyes, chicken guts, piggy friends. And shit for
brains. Oh, man. Oh, here it comes.
Yeah.
No good at making money. Did you see that house?
Yeah. I know, right?
Jesus.
And no good at all in bed.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, when's the last time he got it up, Henry? Oh. That's a low blow. You were a man in our bed. Gee, I wonder why he can't get it up for this shrieking harpy.
You'll be wearing your balls for earrings. He just sits there and takes it.
And there we are.
There's Fluffy.
That's great. Look at that shot.
Yeah.
It's so cartoony.
Oh. And another neck bite. Just tell it to call you Billy.
Call you Billy. He's watching her get eaten.
I like that he is still affected by this.
Yeah, you know right. Yeah.
He's still kind of in like overwhelmed by what he just saw.
Get some fresh air.
Yeah. You know, because even though what he wanted to happen happened, he's still kind of horrified by the whole thing.
He did watch his wife just get eaten to death by a Yeti or something, or a Wendigo. I mean, that's pretty, you got a pretty strong stomach.
Found some locks. Time to chain this thing up again.
Okay, it's, again, gutsy.
You know, and I have been around academia enough to know that, well, to not be surprised that something could stay under a stairwell for 100 years, more than 100 years.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, you know, just
these big places with all these nooks and crannies that
you know, and it's kind of just like, well, why are we going to go under there now?
There you go.
No one's gone under there in years, so.
I love how quiet, and this is great. He's got a...
Yeah.
And then he just gets it through the loop when the thing starts to thrash a little. This is great. Oh, look at that. Really, the hand coming out. Look at that.
Yeah. And this is almost completely in shadow.
Better hope to God that lock holds before you can shut it. There we go. Got it. Okay. Woo. Okay.
But one thing I notice, he does not nail it back down.
And that's right. There's enough.
That's not going to be.
He's got this plan.
That's not going to be. And look at those panels.
That's great. The summer session is over. The fall semester doesn't start for 2 weeks. Is this, from your experience with academia, is this accurate? Like, are colleges in the summer, if they don't have summer classes, like ghost towns? Or is there, in a school this big would always have people?
You know, especially the college that I went to, when it depends on the size of the building. The where I went to college had a fine arts building, and there were people around, but it was far from full. And I could walk, it'd be very simple to walk around campus and walk into buildings without seeing another person.
Wow. Okay. Huh. That's creepy.
Yeah. To say, well, the thing too, for me, my school was also sort of a commuter school. Most of the students were from the city.
Oh, and so people weren't staying on campus and stuff.
Yeah. So people weren't staying on campus. They were just going home.
That's a big difference. That's a big difference. You don't have, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, shout out to the UTEP Miners there.
There's a great matte painting coming up there. Great matte painting of the. Where is this quarry? Where are they? That there's this. It's like a 50-foot quarry. My God. Look at this.
Well, and later on, don't they say it's like 70 feet deep or something?
Yeah.
Like,
holy shit. We talked over the line where he says there were three human beings. Well, two human beings and Billy. Great line. And then he has the thing about where did they go? How much could it eat? And you're like, yeah, physically, where are the bones? Where are the, you know, like the stomach of this thing is only so big. Like, how did it manage to do that? But
it's okay. Well, you know, we never get a full body shot. Maybe he's got like this big pot belly or something.
Maybe so.
But yeah, yeah. I mean, and he does. I mean, Fluffy eats everything.
Yeah. You know. Now, I do have to, you know, question Henry's plan here, because it's like this thing has been alive without food or water for 150 years, but drowning it is somehow.
Right.
That's going to do it. Like, really, Henry? You know, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
I might have put it back in the crate and then like gotten a gun and shot the crate set it on holes fire or something. Oh, look at these. Boy, he needs a shower, by the way. He's been in these clothes all day. He's going to just play some chess.
Saying, I haven't done anything to anybody. Henry says, neither have I.
They finally spend all their time together. This is great. Yeah.
They're tacitly agreeing to be quiet about the whole thing.
Yep. I like, what if it gets out, Henry? You saw the way I changed it up. His line reads in it. You wouldn't worry. I just left the way. I mean, again, you know how Holbrook, Oscar-nominated actor.
Right.
Had great performances up until his mid-90s, for Pete's sakes. I mean, not a shock that he's a great actor. But, man, he really crushes this part. You know, you wouldn't worry. He's kind of annoyed. Yeah. I threw the monster in the ravine. What's the problem? And now.
We see it underwater.
Here we go. Gets out of the crate.
Bubbles coming up.
Oh, shit. It's going to go.
Freezing in the eyes.
I hope it can't find Henry's house. I hope it just, I don't know, goes nuts in the town or something.
You know, well, that's what's great about these stories. They in the, very much in the, there's the muscle up ad. What a man. The, very much like the EC comic stories that it's based on. It's, these are all kind of morality tales. You know, everyone gets their comeuppance in some way.
Well, maybe. I mean, Henry and we don't know if Henry and Dex ever get, you know, I mean, we don't know.
You know, that's
I mean, the monster escapes, but we don't know what happens to it. I mean, maybe it just goes nuts and eats people in the town and never gets to their house. But
that's a good point, because it's not like Mike the janitor deserved to get eaten.
No. Yeah. He's just a regular guy.
You know, even Billy, I mean, she was shrill, but I don't think that means she should get eaten by a monster.
Yeah, I mean, good Lord, just divorce already. I mean, for pizza. Oh, there's the ashtray, by the way. It's the soap dish. Oh, there we go. So we've got They're Creeping Up on You, starring the great E.G. Marshall, of course. Right. You know, was in tons of great movies, played the president in Superman 2.
Yeah,
he did. In 12 Angry Men. I mean, just, you know, again, one of the played James Mitchell in Nixon. Which is one of his last performances. I just love him in that. He's great in this. Now, I think they offered this to Max von Sydow, and he turned it down, right? And I'm thinking, if you're Max von Sydow, why wouldn't you turn this down? Because you read the script, and you're like, you're going to get covered in roaches for 12 minutes. Right. I'd be like, this doesn't sound like a fun shoot. Ingmar Bergman must be doing something I can do. You know what I mean? Like, this is just, I mean, I know that a lot of the bugs are controlled and some of them are fake or whatever, but still, E.G. Marshall gets to spend a lot of time with bugs in this. That does not sound like a fun shoot.
Yeah. It was, I think it was something like they estimated 20,000 roaches, something like that.
Dear God.
But you know, but this also must be pretty great for an actor because it's pretty much a solo thing here. And there's a couple of voices that come over, but for the most part, it is all E.G.
Marshall. E.G. Marshall. And this is the most, I'd say this is the most EC-esque story because it is the morality tale of this guy who is an absolute sociopath. And he's a businessman sociopath. I mean, again, we're living through that right now, of just people that this guy has obscene gobs of money and he's using it to kill and destroy people just so he can get a little more money.
Right. It's classic exploitation of, you know, everyone else in order to make his money.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure if he had thought about it, he would have gone to space already.
Yeah. Yes. Abs, he's trying to buy Twitter right now. there he is.
He just saw a roach. Yeah, thought he
saw a giant roach. Now, have you ever lived in a place that had roaches?
Oh yeah. I mean, I think there's.
I mean, you've lived in big cities, so I guess it's part of the course. You know,
I just moved from Chicago, where the big thing is actually. I actually didn't see a lot of roaches. I saw a lot of rats on the street. They're the city mascot. When I lived in my hometown of El Paso, my wife and I lived in this apartment building that had like a central garden and had a lot of plants around and that sort of thing, which, you know, just really attracts bugs and roaches. And one time I was sitting in the living room watching TV and something went blap on my hand.
Oh no.
And I looked down, it was a roach that had fallen from the ceiling
my hand.
Oh, and of course, I freak out and go, wah, and I flip it off. And then I'm like, shit, where is this?
Right now, now you've just made the problem a little worse.
Yeah, I tore the apartment apart looking for that roach. And I finally did find it, but oh my God. So yeah, it's never a roach problem this bad.
I hope not.
Yeah.
E.G.
Marshall's living in this very sterile looking place, but there's a roach crawling right on his hand.
$3,200 a month, he said. In 1982 money. That's some serious cash. Goodbye, George. Oh, there we go. Now, my second apartment at the Kubert School had roaches. And that was deeply unpleasant because I was, we didn't have a lot of space. I was sleeping essentially on a futon in the living room. So like I would get up and like if I went to go to the kitchen to get a drink of water in the middle of the night, turn the light on, I'd hear skitter, 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 and see them all disappear into cracks. And it just made me sick. It just made me sick. And we went and got one of those bug bombs, the nuclear level bombs where it's like set it off and don't come back for 8 hours. We're like, all right, go see some movies and we set it off, came back, and God damn it, the things were back in about 10 minutes. I mean, it just did nothing.
Yeah,
it was just deeply. And I remember one time we had people over, one of which was a young woman that I was, I think, about to go on a double date with. Mm-hmm. And she's sitting on the couch and behind her on the wall is a roach.
Oh, my God.
And I'm sitting there going, do I say something? Do I hope she just gets up and does it? Because if it touches, I'm starting sweating like Fritz Weaver. And from what I remember, I think the thing just like disappeared behind the sofa and I was like, let's go, that kind of thing. But that was deeply, deeply unpleasant, that experience. Cause he just, I don't know. I can handle bugs, but I certainly don't want them in my home. And just the idea that, oof.
Right. Okay. So you were talking earlier about, the reasons for these things to be happening. What do you think is the reason that he is getting inundated with these roaches all of a sudden? Because he just got a phone call from the wife of a CEO.
Katzenmeier,
that Upson Pratt basically put out of business with a hostile takeover, I believe.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And the CEO was so upset he killed himself.
Yep.
You know. So do you think this is you know, unholy revenge, or
yes, it is completely spiritual revenge. It is he has done nothing but evil things in his life, and he's gleeful about it. Mm-hmm. He's not even sorry. He's finds it all very entertaining, and the universe is putting the whammy on him by
right.
giving the very thing that he can't stand, which is these roaches. So that's yeah. To me, this is the like I said, it's the most. I love. You hope you get cancer in the worst place. Leprosy. She's great. I love. She's screaming at him. I love her line reading this. I like to fire him.
Yeah.
It was on my husband's address book, you son of a bitch. I love the way she spits that out.
In his face. Well, I can't fire him, can I?
Can't fire him, can I? Yeah.
Bam. And he's just kind of bemused by the whole by the whole thing.
Oh. Yeah. Anytime there's food with little black bits and then you mm-hmm. got bugs in your house, that's not good.
Oh, man. Yeah. No, and he's... And later on, you know, E.G. Marshall is going to call... Basically, everyone who's not him, vermin.
Yep.
Everyone in society is vermin.
And he's racist. I mean, and yeah. he's an unabashed racist.
Yes.
Too, when he talks to the super.
yeah, because of course he is.
I love the hair, too. I love the crazy, just like Larry right. Fine. He's like evil Larry Fine or something. He's great at that. Everybody knew the movie they were in. You know, yes. Everybody knew the style of this.
One thing I like about that, though, is that they went right up to the line. No one is necessarily, with the exception of Stephen King, probably, no one is being really hammy about it. You know, they're like I said, they're all kind of these two-dimensional characters. You know, they're archetypes. But no one is necessarily overselling it. You know, I mean, yeah. I can see these characters in a comic book. I can see them in this, you know, obviously in this movie. It works really well.
Yeah, completely. Yeah. Right. And as we were saying, I mean, Stephen King is appropriate for the story he's in.
Yeah.
You know, that story is dialed up to 15 and he's doing 15.
Yeah.
This is a little more controlled. I love that the food that he's eating is like just mush.
Yeah.
It's just kind of like an undetermined mush, you know, like the kind of thing that a bug could get into easily, you know what easily. I mean, like if I was worried about bugs, I would be eating solid object food, because
yeah,
you know, right there we go, see,
yeah, he's taking a look at the bowl,
bugs on the spoon, he's gonna look in there like look what is this food? Ugh. What is that?
Oh, there's a full-size roach in there.
Oh,
yeah, what is that? It looks
like... yeah, it's just ground up mush, like
yeah.
Oh, no,
and it has the consistency of oatmeal, but it has the color of gravy. And
yeah.
Some bran flakes or something he's pouring out here.
They're going to come out. And there we go.
Full of roaches.
Oof. I wonder how they didn't kill any roaches for this movie. They mm-hmm. roach handlers don't allow that. And I'm fine with that. We shouldn't be killing any living thing for a friggin' movie. But right. I wonder, some of these shots, like, it really looks like they get squished.
Yeah.
And I wonder how they faked it. You know, like there's one part where he stamps his foot down on one of the roaches. And I'm hard, like, well, then how did he, you know, this guy? Oh, no, Mr. Pratt. He is totally talking down to this guy.
Yes. And he doesn't even realize it. This is David Early, Mr. White, as the maintenance guy.
Yep.
And he's totally talking in this stereotypical, you know, borderline step and fetch it
mm-hmm.
kind of tone.
Here we go. You might go far white. I've noticed that in service jobs, people like yourself often do. Like, okay. Yeah. I love people of color. He's got to underline it.
Yeah.
Okay. We didn't already get your racism. You had to underscore it. Thank you. And yeah, this guy is totally
winding
making
him
fun
up.
Of him and he doesn't know. Do it now.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Right now.
Right now. This looks like an awful place to live, by the way. Like, I mean, what is there to do? You know what I mean? Like, there's no, I mean, we don't see all of it, but like there's no books. There's no television. There's no, like, you know what I mean? Like, he's like, geez.
No, there's no creature comforts at all.
No.
It's I mean,
look at that table there. I mean, he's got right there. Like, how did he not stomp the, maybe they cut the frame out. Like, maybe they got rid of, you know.
Or I assume at that point it's a
fake
bug or something.
Okay. Oh, I don't know why I'm feeling sorry. These are roaches, but still, I don't. Again, I don't want to see anything get killed for a movie. It's just a movie.
Yeah, I grew up in Hell's Kitchen. Bugs everywhere. I know what to do with a bug when I see it. And see, that's you. Are you talking about bugs, or are you talking about people?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
No, lights in the city are going out.
Oh shit!
I said, "What the fuck?"
G. Marshall saying the F word as well.
Yeah. If it was my power company, this would never happen.
There we go. Oh, shadows. They're in the lights.
Yeah, they're in the light fixtures.
I would just leave.
Look at that coming out.
Just leave at this point. Oh, look at this. Oh, lordy, lordy. Yeah, now, there's one sequence where a roach comes out, and it is like the size of like your fist. Not your fist, but like... Yeah. There's one, I think it's where it crawls out of that little zoom, that little suction thing that he's got.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And my God, it's like three times the size of the rest of the roaches. You're like, what is that thing being irradiated? Like, what the hell?
There's definitely some like those Madagascar roaches mixed in there. So,
oh, dear Lord.
Yeah. So the lights are out and there's roaches everywhere. He hits the emergency power. God. Has to brush them off the phone.
Just
off himself.
Leave, man. Just leave. Yeah, right there. Like, how did they not? Now, that's interesting. There is no roach on his glove.
On his glove.
So is this not really happening? Is this, that's a big one. Is this all in his mind? Because he squished that roach and then it's gone. So here we go. I think we're about to see the biggest one I've ever seen.
This has got to stop. And they're all
there. There's a big one there.
Yeah,
where's the one? I'll know it when I see. They talk about it on the commentary where one of the guys is like, "Oh God," because I think it crawls out of the hole, and it's just like, "Oh, they're in the jukebox."
Yeah.
Oh no! All my Guy Lombardo records ruined.
The maintenance guy is stuck in the elevator, so he can't get there.
Yeah, I think this isn't really happening. This is all in his mind.
You know, that is, I like that theory, except for one thing, that the later on in the big, end scene of this, how would he be imagining?
There it is. There's that one. There it is. Oh, God.
Dude. Filling the sink. This is.
All right. So I'm sorry to interrupt you. In the end scene? And what about the end scene?
No, I was just going to say, I'm not bothered by bugs, but man, this even creeps me out.
Oh, good Lord. Yes.
Here he goes into his safe room. So I wonder what they did to make them scatter like that instead of just sitting, just sitting around.
George Romero talks about, he says that like, if you put down a line of like, oh shoot, what did he say? It was like a clear line of like Windex or something. They won't cross it. They just will not cross it. And so like he said, they would put lines down to get them to like lane them around. Oh. Huh. So now here, I mean, they're just going all over the place, I guess. But I guess in some respects, that's how they sort of controlled them. So yeah, here, now he's in there. Now, I love here. Like, what does he think he's going to find at this point? Upson, like,
it's just rippling.
Again,
meanwhile, just, on the phone, the widow is going, I hope you die.
Oh, look at that. Look at the little bug, little cartoon bug. Look at that big one. Oof. Just leave, dude. Just leave.
That's what's interesting too, is that he just will not leave his apartment.
Just leave the damn apartment. Oh, here we go. Oh boy.
Oh.
Now I think at this point he's exited the movie. I don't think E.G. Marshall is, because the next time I think we see him, it's going to be the dummy. But
he basically had a heart attack, right? Is that what happened?
It seems to suggest that the bugs have crawled inside of him and are eating him from the inside. But we haven't really. It does seem to suggest that because look how clean the place is now.
Yeah,
right?
The power's back on and there's no roaches anywhere.
So
yeah.
Then it's all in his mind. But then, of course, we're going to see that they're all in.
That honky bastard.
Mr. Pratt. Bug got your tongue. He's just having a good time.
Yeah.
There they go. That's really E.G. Marshall. Look at that. That's really him.
Look at that blood coming out of the.
And there, the right
squirting out of his forehead.
So now, now there's the fake. That's the model. Now he's clearly dead, but yet here are the bugs. So the bugs must really be there because we're seeing them. We wouldn't be seeing them. Yeah, oh, look crawling, at that.
And they just burst out of that is, man, that's a ton of them. Oh, my God.
That is foul. That is foul. According to Savini, that was toilet paper, colored toilet paper. And you just put them in it, and they just burst through it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Here we go. Here's the final panel.
And also, according to Savini, the bugs that are filling up this room, the majority are nuts and raisins.
So
think of that the next time you're having your
No more trail mix for me. That's it. So now look, there's six more issues of Creepshow, and yet it says first issue collector's item. So what did they...
So the next morning, that's a pretty neat trick there. I never noticed that. The one garbage man kicks the lid off the trash can and the other one catches it.
Yeah.
And one of those garbage men is
Tom Savini. That's Tom Savini. Of course, we've been talking about him. Yes, there he is.
Yeah. Special effects guy and sex machine from Dusk Till Dawn.
That's right. Chew your food.
They're yelling at the garbage truck.
You're having a good time.
And he just tosses it back.
Yeah, it's a comic book. What? It's a comic book. What? It's a comic book. Yeah, they're making Stephen King's performance look subtle in comparison here.
They really are. You can't be safe sitting that close to the crusher.
No,
on the
that doesn't seem like a either. Great idea. Voodoo doll. We could send for that. Oh no! Wait, no. Somebody already sent for it. He pokes his finger through to underscore. I can't get it.
You know, I would love to make fun of these guys, but I would probably have the same reaction if I found a comic book.
Me too. Shit. I was like that when I was 12 and I found Playboys in the woods, you know? Oh, very exciting.
I see. We used to find ours in the ditch.
Wow. That's kids. That's how you got porn back in the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's something missing from the dad's shirt there. Mm-hmm. His mom.
You poor bear. Ben Gay.
Ben Gay.
Do they still make that? I guess they probably do. They probably don't call it that anymore. Oh, the kid has a Clash of the Titans poster in the background. I just noticed that. That's great. Good callback. There we go. I love how vicious this is. Like they don't soften it. He straight up murders his father.
Yeah. Just poking him over in the neck over and over with that voodoo doll.
Wortham would not approve of this. This is what he's afraid of in comics. And there we are. Our freeze frame on future author Joe Hill.
Yeah, back to the animated Creep.
And there we go. That's Creep Show, everybody.
Yeah.
What?
Everyone gets it.
What a great movie. Just, you know, every time I watch it, I just get goofy and happy because it's just so ghoulish and fun and delighted with itself, and it's all of these really talented people kind of working at their top of their game. Romero, Stephen King, Hal Holbrook, Andrew, you know, it's the perfect movie to see when you're 11, 12, 13, you know, it's just absolute perfect thing. By the way, we should, Michael Gornick, director of photography, we should give him a shout out because, I mean, this is a beautiful looking movie.
Yeah. And he would go on to direct Creepshow 2.
Well,
I know.
Probably the less said about that, the better.
You know, although Romero's guiding hand there,
you do like the raft at least. I did like that story, but okay. Let's end up, let's keep this positive. So I mean, geez, Max. I mean, that Creep Show, man. You know, I mean, it's I don't know. Is there anything else we have to say about it? It went by. This movie's 2 hours long. I feel like we were recording for about a half hour.
Yeah. And, you know, and the thing is I have watched this movie several times, right? But this is the first time I've watched it a lot on cable. And this was the first time that I've seen it uncut in its, you know, in its theater release form. And it was kind of neat to see all the things that, you know, that cable takes out for, you know, commercials and whatever else. You know, it was a lot, not a lot, but it was gorier than I remembered. It was more foul mouthed than I remembered. You know, and it was you know, it was already a fun movie, but it was actually more fun, I think, for having those things in it. This is, you know, I never get tired of this movie. I love this movie.
it doesn't, it's for as goofy as it is, I feel like it doesn't pull its punches. Like it, letting the movie end with the kid murdering his father. Yeah. It's sort of taking it seriously. It's not trying to say, well, let's make this acceptable to everybody. No, this is aimed at horror fans. And they will understand that, that's the coin of the realm is doing this kind of stuff. And some people get away with it. Hal Holbrook and Fritz Weaver maybe get away with it. E.G. Marshall, not so much. You know, but man, it's just, and anthologies are tough. Anthologies are tough to do because, of course, you know, you're always setting your mind back to zero and they can feel very long. But this one just flies by. So let's wrap up here. Probably our ratings are the same, but how would you rate the five stories from least to best? I mean, we love them all. We love them all. There's no bad stories here, but
yeah,
in terms of, in your mind, what is the least effective to the most effective?
Wow. Man, that is hard. I would say probably the least for me is Father's Day, which is actually the one that opens up the movie. Maybe, oh man, this is hard. probably The Lonesome Death of Jordy Verrill. I mean, I have to, like I said, it's a personal favorite, but I can't say it's one of the better stories in this. Just because it, you know, it's really kind of, it's kind of set apart, but I think that's important for the movie actually. Then probably maybe a tie between The Creeping Up on You and Something to Tide You Over. I could probably flip back and forth on that. And of course The Crate, number one.
Yeah. I wish I had something more imaginative to counter that, but yeah, I would say that Father's Day is probably the least, just because it is the least surprising in any way. Like it just, stuff just happens exactly the way you think it's going to happen. And then Jordy Verrill, I used to put Jordy Verrill at the least for the longest time, but now I really see it more as it really is its own cartoonish complete piece, you know? So I would put Father's Day, then Verrill, then I guess I'd probably go with Creeping Up on You. Then, There's Something to Tide You Over, and then The Crate. I feel like They're Creeping Up on You is fun and it's got a great performance, but again, there's not a whole lot of like twists to it. It's just like, okay, the bugs are going to kill them, and they do.
Right.
Again, it's fine, but at least They're Creeping Up. Something to Tide You Over has some twists and turns and some truly wonderful turn by Leslie Nielsen, and nothing beats The Crate. I mean, The Crate to me is just such a great piece all by itself. And like I said, it's one of those things where I'm like, it could be a whole movie, but I'm glad it isn't, because then they'd probably ruin it by making it too long. So, like I said, it is really, to me, the best of all the horror anthologies probably ever made. I would put this one at the top of the heap. So it's 40 years old. For anyone who hasn't seen it, I can't imagine if you're listening to this, you haven't seen it, but I mean, go watch it again if you haven't seen it in a while, because this is just a total blast. So Max, thank you so much for doing this with me. This was your first audio commentary, right?
It was. So I'm to blame. This is my first one. It was a lot of fun. I mean, you could not have picked a better movie for me to get my feet wet with.
Yeah, it's real, real fun. And I love doing these commentaries. And as I said at the top of the show, I mean, we have got so many movies just hitting their 40th, let alone movies hitting 50 and 60 and 30 or 25. I mean, there's all sorts of anniversaries you can do, but man, just 1982 alone was a hell of a year for movies of our generation. So we'll be doing some, you know, so we've already covered The Thing and some other things. We'll be doing some more 1982 vintage material later on this year for Film and Water. So as we sign off, Max, why don't you tell people where they can find you here on the network?
They can find me here on the network. I'm currently doing a podcast on the human fly called the Death Defying Human Flycast. And I have some currently hibernating podcasts on Plastic Man. It's called The Plastic Cast, and a literary podcast called The Mirror Factory. So hopefully all those will be coming back soon. And otherwise you can find me all over social media.
all over social media. Getter, Truth Social, Grindr, all those things.
MySpace.
Yeah, MySpace. It's great. You just, whatever social media you go onto, Max, you can find Max there.
Swipe right, swipe left. You'll find me somewhere.
Exactly. Which is the good one? Swipe right or swipe left?
God, you know, I don't even know.
I don't remember. I've never been on that thing, so I don't know. Anyway, again, thank you so much for doing this, Max. I really appreciate it. And thanks to all of you for listening. Let us know what you think of Creepshow the movie and what you thought of this commentary. We'd love to hear about your thoughts on what Max and I talked about. Of course, you can find back episodes of the show on our website, findwaterpodcast.com. You can find the show on Twitter at @FilmAndWaterPod. You can subscribe to the show on any podcatcher of your choice. And then finally, if you want to support the Find Water Podcast Network, just go to patreon.com/FW podcast. And there you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name checked on a show of your choice. So big thanks to my pal, Corey Musa, for his support of the Film and Water Podcast. I very much appreciate it. Also, big thanks to David S. Gutierrez and Gord Tolton. So that's going to do it, everybody. Like I said, we're going to be coming back with more commentaries later on this year. So look out for them. Until then, that's a wrap.
Meteor ship!